Hey guys, it's Mitchell of Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast. Before we begin this episode, just wanted to let you know that we ran into a bit of an audio snafu on this one. And so we were just kind of stuck with the Zoom audio. It's still listenable and it's still a lot of fun, but it's just not the, you know, studio quality that we normally bring to the table. But yeah, just letting you know that ahead of time. Enjoy the app and thank you for listening. Oh, and sorry it's been a while. Like, you know, holidays and insurrection in the Capitol and all these things, COVID, you know, just kind of weighing us down. But Jay and I are back at it and we'll have more episodes for you soon. Thanks again for listening. Bye.
Previously on Jay and Mitch.
That's never going to work.
Well, sing it. Can you sing? I'll go high, you go low.
Is that what we're going for?
Yeah, harmonize. I'll do the high note, you do the low note.
Kind of Amazing Grace, could you do that?
How about...
Ready?
My vocal.
3, 2, 1.
Previously on Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast.
Perfect.
Cut, print, that's a wrap.
The nightmare.
It's time for Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast.
Ryan, do you mind if I come in the pool house?
Yeah, sure, whatever. It's your house. It's your pool house. Because the pool house is part of the house, which they all belong to you.
Oh, right. Yeah. I forgot about that. Ryan, listen. I love you like a son. And I know you're going through some stuff with this Oliver kid. I just need you to talk to me about it.
I just don't trust him. He's dangerous.
But you need to talk to me. You need to explain specifically why he's dangerous. Now, if that's too much for you, I understand. But that's the only way I can help you, son.
I gotta do some sit-ups.
Well, you're grounded, so... Stay in here, read your comic books, and I'll be back in the third act to help you out. All right.
Thank you guys for indulging yet another improvisation scene.
We're enjoying.
Brilliant.
Here's the thing. We didn't even want to do a podcast. We just wanted to do local theater and do each episode of the OC. And we had the theater booked. We had all the roles filled, and then fucking COVID decided to show up and ruin what certainly would have been a Broadway performance. So that's how Broadway works, right? Someone from Broadway comes and sees your local thing and goes,
and you guys were just going to do scenes from the OC, playing all the characters?
No. Just random episodes and scenes.
And like not verbatim to the script, just what you guys kind of remember.
Guys, we went over the rules of podcasting before we started.
And we'll be quiet now.
Just like thrown those out the window, like they mean nothing to you. And I don't know. Is this Orange County or is this the Wild West? Because last I checked, we were in Orange County. The Orange County.
Who, you got your six shooter?
Pew, 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 pew.
Now you're bringing your brother into this and... It's just
he started it. He started speaking before I started speaking.
I thought I got excited.
He's complimenting our scene, and we appreciated that.
Well, if you haven't guessed already, we have guests this episode.
Also, this is Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
All fucked up now. I am Mitchell. This is Jay.
Yes.
And we're here to talk about every episode of the television program, The OC. With us today are Muhammad and Fuad Joma, two great guys who have a great podcast of their own, the Rank Bros podcast. What's up, y'all?
What's up?
Hello,
thanks
hello,
for having
hello.
Us.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for following all the rules. And
you know I'm a rule follower.
I guess I always tell Muhammad that I always talk to him as if he's the boss of us, because he runs Kitty Wing Productions, who puts this podcast up, and he always
does almost nothing for the podcast. You guys do all the work.
He's always quick to go, I am not your boss.
Yeah, not even close. But thanks for keeping me in the loop. I think one time you guys like mentioned my name at the end of a show, and I was so happy. And not the episode I was on. It was a different episode.
Well, now you're on another returning guest. And Fu, this is your first time here. And as we understand it, you have never seen the OC before this episode halfway through the first season.
Yeah, I jumped right into the middle with this episode. I knew nothing about the OC before this.
No.
I feel like I learned pretty quickly.
Oh, that's great to hear. Yeah, I'm very curious as to how easily or difficult it was to pick up like roles and who's who and the relationships between these characters. Was that at all a challenge? Or
yeah, there are a lot of characters in this show, and they all have very complicated relationships with each other. Like, I thought I had somebody figured out, and I was like, oh, he's also her dad? So yeah, there was a little confusion there, but I think by the end of it, I was pretty in line.
Yeah, I imagine the Julie Kirsten Caleb relationship was confusing.
Very much also, so. Yeah.
You're jumping in on this is the 18th episode. And
like the end of like a many episode arc, really.
Yeah, this is the sixth and final installment of what we've been calling the Oliver era. And and we're all very excited that this is the last episode of him. But well, Phil,
I don't know if Muhammad is.
What? If I'm what?
From what I recall, the reason we have you on is because
you're our boss.
You're our boss. But also that you have kind of a contrarian opinion to the whole Oliver
saga. I mean, it definitely. Yeah, I was texting with you guys around the first couple episodes of the Oliver saga, saying that it was the most excited I'd been watching the show, because it is super like compelling, edgier, cliffhangery stuff for maybe the first time in the show's run up until this point. It does go on for a little longer than it needs. It's a lot of episodes where they're just sort of beating around the bush until it finally, you know, comes out. So I was pleased that it was over, and I liked this episode. I was a fan. So
yeah, it was, I will agree, it was pretty thrilling.
Yeah.
For not what I expected. And I'll tell you, like, when you say it's the last episode in a six-episode arc, I finished the episode and thought, like, oh, I guess each episode is, like, its own, like, individual story. Because, like, everything kind of wrapped up. It was like, oh, okay, well, that's one, and they just do something totally different in the next one.
There have been a few instances like that where there is a character who comes in for one episode. This is, like, the first kind of multi-episode character that I believe that we've encountered. There's more throughout the series, but this is the first one where they're just going, this is the direction we're going in for the next couple episodes.
Does Anna stick around in the show, or is she gone pretty quickly too? Because I know they're broken up now. I have not watched ahead. This is the latest episode I've seen. So,
so you want me to tell you?
Yeah, you want to spoil it?
Spoilies?
I mean, you guys spoiled so much for me talking with me about this show already.
So she leaves eventually. She goes back to Pittsburgh. She's around for...
So she's kind of just like a long story arc, too. I mean, she came in like episode 4 or something and is gone before the end of the season, I'm guessing. Yeah.
I mean, what is life but, you know, a series of story arcs between characters that are your friends and family?
Here's a question. Is Oliver gone forever now?
Yes.
That is crazy. Nobody checks up on him?
What a finish, though. Wow.
Well, yeah.
went out with a bang.
He needs help, and he needs support from his friends. And the fact that, even though like he was being crazy with Marissa, the fact that she never, like, you think she like called him and was like, hey, I'm just checking in, are you okay? I mean, the dude needs help.
It might be better if she doesn't
Yeah, yeah, I imagine she should be the one reaching out for support.
Yeah. Their relationship is confusing, honestly.
We're getting this is now the end of the episode we're talking about. We have a whole episode to talk about to get to that point. Phil, just real quick before we get into it, this was your first episode of the OC, but did you ever get into any other kind of teen drama, like Dawson's Creek or anything like that?
Not really, but it wasn't unfamiliar territory. It felt very much Party of Five and all of those teen drama type shows. It all kind of felt very similar. But no, I had, in fact, I always confuse this show with Gossip Girl. I feel like watching it, I was like, oh, that's this one. Okay, I got it.
It's the same guy, Josh Schwartz.
Creator. Oh, yeah.
How about that?
That makes sense. I've never seen Gossip Girl, but if it's anything like the OC, probably going to love it.
once we smell a sequel podcast. Yeah, all 94 episodes of the OC. We're moving on.
You guys finish this podcast in 12 years, you guys can tackle Gossip Girl.
Let's get into it, guys.
This
still happens.
This is important.
No.
We're doing make a lot of history on the podcast tonight. It's the first time with two guests.
Yeah.
It's the first time with a guest who has never seen the show that we're about to talk about prior to watching it last night. And it's our first time getting to play everybody's favorite mini game show at the beginning of a podcast. And that is, of course, called, we can all say it together, How tall is
Lin-Manuel Miranda?
How tall is Lin-Manuel Miranda?
Okay, so, Fu, you're a Hamilton fan.
Yeah.
You're a total hamhead, just like we are.
Hamilton fan, yeah.
So this is a little game that Mitchell and I play every week that we do the show, where I ask him how tall Lin-Manuel Miranda is, and he has to guess it. The three of you are each going to take a turn, and because you're a first-time guest, I'm going to let you choose if you want to go first, second, or third. But keep in mind that Mitchell plays this game every week and knows the answer. Muhammad listens to the podcast, and I'm pretty sure he knows the answer, too. So would you like to go first, second, or third?
I'm gonna considering they both know the answer and I could just follow their lead, I'm gonna go first.
Old man.
That's right.
Oh, let's see if his bravery is rewarded. Okay, Fu. As of this moment, right now, I'm looking at Google. How tall is Lin-Manuel Miranda?
I'm gonna say he's not that tall. I'm going to go 5'10".
5'10" from Fu. Okay. Second will be Muhammad. Muhammad Joma, same question to you. How tall is Lin-Manuel Miranda?
Well, Jay, you know I listen to this show religiously, sometimes 3 or 4 times per episode. So I've heard this. I know the answer, and I can say with confidence that my man, Lin-Manuel Miranda, is 3'7".
3'7" from Muhammad, who has heard the answer to this question. Mm-hmm. Interesting takes. Okay, that leaves our returning champion.
Applauding myself. Good answer.
Our returning champion, the Tony Romo of how tall is Lin-Manuel Miranda, from Atlanta, Georgia, Mitchell Hartage. It's the same old song and dance, my friend. You know the question. How tall is Lin-Manuel Miranda?
All right. Is he barefoot?
He is.
He's barefoot. Okay. Is he in space? Because I hear that when you're in space, you actually grow a couple inches because your spine elongates because of zero gravity.
Oh yeah, those twins.
Exactly.
Is he in here space? Here is what I know. Hamilton just got adapted into German, so I know he's been in Germany at some point. But to my knowledge, he is not currently, nor has he been recently, in space.
Do I have to use the metric system because he's in Germany?
No, because I think he's still in America currently. He just spent some time over there. So he had to, when he checked into customs, he had to convert his height to the metric system. And then when he came back, he had to convert it again.
I gotcha.
To what is our system of measurement?
Anti-metric system?
Yeah.
Okay, good to know. Good. Those were all my questions. Okay, so he's barefoot, he's not in space, and he's in America. I got to go 5'9".
5'9" from Mitchell. Okay, so just to recap. Fu, 5'10". Muhammad, 3'7". And Mitchell, 5'9". I'm opening the envelope.
Oh, God.
He really is.
He has an envelope that sees wax.
There's a smaller envelope inside this one. This seems a little redundant.
Ballot? Did you write the answer on your absentee ballot, Jay?
No.
Important. Got a runoff.
Okay. This is close, you guys. Lin-Manuel Miranda is 5'9.5".
Whoa!
So we all win. All three of us.
You all were equally as close. You know, Thanksgiving just happened, and you know, when you eat, you get a little taller. True. So
get the.
I didn't know he was barefoot. I would have said 5'11".
All right! Congratulations, you all win. You won air fryers. Tesla air fryers.
Hell yeah.
Maybe.
This is the most expensive kind.
Yep.
Dude, way to go.
Real question. How many people do you think tune into this podcast because they're excited about the OC and then tune out when you get into Otales Lin-Manuel Miranda?
Hopefully, well, they just tune in to tune us out. I feel like we can accommodate that.
Yeah.
All right. Season 1, episode 18 of the OC, The Truth. This episode was written by Josh Schwartz and Alan Heinberg. He also co-wrote The Model Home, The Debut, The Rescue, and Wonder Woman, the movie. Wow. Fact about Alan Heinberg. This one was directed by Rodman Flinder, who is a TV director. He directed some episodes of The Office. He directed Conan O'Brien Can't Stop. Remember that documentary?
Oh, yeah. It was really good. Yeah.
Same director. And several episodes of Ugly Betty. That one's for Jay. Yeah, I know.
You're an Ugly Betty fan, Jay?
I love the idea of Ugly Betty.
That it's like got a mean title.
I truly have never seen it and don't really know what it's about, but it was a fun thing to say at a time.
It was all the rage in 2008 or whatever. All right, so this episode begins, as everyone does, with a previously on. It's pretty much just a recap of the last episode. You've got Ryan doesn't trust Oliver. He finds and reads Oliver's note to Marissa, confesses that he read it to Marissa. Marissa dumps him. Oliver gets all Bond villain on Ryan. Ryan beats up Oliver in school. And Seth and Anna are probably going to break up and Summer's going to get with Seth. We kind of got that out of the way. B-plot. Foo, was the previously on sufficient for you to kind of understand what you were going into?
It was sufficient in terms of plot. But I did not understand who everyone was and how they related to each other.
Yeah.
I went into the episode, I guess kind of like beginning of the episode, thinking that Ryan was Marissa's brother, possibly. That was why he was so protective of her. I soon realized I was wrong on that.
That's valid. They're both like
totally blonde,
wide, white kids. I guess Eddie is very protective of her. Yeah.
I definitely got the gist of the episode in terms of the Oliver story, especially. I don't know that I totally picked up on the B story, because I was a little confused as that went along. But
yeah, that's
all. The Seth and Anna and Summer?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Been dragged out for like 10 episodes of this.
Yeah. Although I did like the way it was played in this episode, but we'll get into that.
I did too. All right, so let's open on the pool house. It's morning. Ryan's just chilling.
Reed. Oh, wait, Foo. So at any point, if you have a question, just blurt it out. Or if you have any comments, there's no real rules, as you've found out up until this point.
There was one rule. I broke that.
Okay, so at this point, everyone tuning in knows that the Rank Bros are bad boys.
That's right. We're the bad boys of podcasting.
You guys and Howard Stern.
Yeah. Howard Stern ranks things, right?
Probably.
Like butts and boobs.
Stuff, yeah. And other offensive things. All right, cool. So we're going to begin. We're just going to go scene by scene, and then we can chat whenever. So Ryan's chilling. He's reading. He is suspended from school. Sandy enters. He's ready to like dad the shit out of this kid right off the bat. And I love it. I love Sandy and Ryan moments because he's the dad Ryan never had. He informs Ryan that he's been suspended indefinitely for beating up Oliver in school. Ryan's like, I'm not apologizing. He said it to my face. He wants me gone so he can get to Marissa. And then Sandy's like, then why'd he drop the assault charges on you? And then my thought is like, he did that to look good to Marissa.
So I thought either that, which I think that is the thing, or in like a deeper thing, like Ryan bailed him out of jail when he got busted trying to buy drugs.
Right.
So if we want to think that Oliver had some good in him, maybe it was like, you know what? I owe him one.
It's the thing.
If he presses charges, Marissa might hold it against him, and he's already accomplished what he needs to accomplish with their relationship. Like, he's winning this battle. You know, he doesn't need to get Chino kicked out. That could only really hurt his chances at this point. So
also, like, Ryan's on probation. I think if he got charged with assault, like, he would just go to jail and then we wouldn't really have a show.
It does seem, I mean, this is the Oliver saga, and it's, I've heard you guys talk about it before, but it just seems Sandy also, I think, is wonderfully written in this episode, but as always, Sandy's the best. But
scene for Foo to be introduced to Sandy.
Yeah, he gets like the full Sandy experience throughout this episode too. But he doesn't. Nobody believes Ryan, and it's one of the things that I thought was compelling about this arc. I said it felt like a horror movie, especially early on, like that thing where nobody believes you and you're the only person that knows that there's a killer or a ghost or whatever. But like, there are moments where it's just like, Sandy, you can believe him. Like, why would he lie? Ryan isn't a liar. He's been a bad kid, but like, he's saying facts. Like, this guy is like trying to frame me and make me look bad. And like, why are they like, I don't know, Ryan, we trust Oliver.
At this point, like, Sandy came to the jailhouse to bail Oliver out when he got busted trying to buy coke. That was how he was introduced.
Yeah.
And then it's just been nothing but like drama like that since then with this kid. Like, that was like a hard thing for me to get over, is like the fact that nobody was really on Ryan's side the whole time. And I get that that's like part of the plot and that needed to
happen. Yeah, but it just doesn't make sense all the time, for sure.
There's one person that's on his side, and we'll get to it.
Oh, I love that.
Holy shit. Is that one person fucking shine like a diamond in this episode. But we'll get to it.
Yeah. So Sandy's like, I'm on your side here, but you need to talk to me to make it make sense. And Ryan's like, Ryan just gives up. He's just like, what's the point? Nobody will believe me. And to which I say, I think Sandy will. Like, if you were Ryan in this case, in this moment, what would you have told Sandy to get him on your side?
Well, Ryan's whole thing is he's not great at communicating. And
that's
kind of a theme in this episode in particular. And Sandy basically tells him later on, like, you gotta use your mouth and or you gotta use your words and talk instead of be violent like you usually do, which is something that people have been telling Ryan since the beginning of the show. But then in the end of the episode, you kind of see that he does that, and he is the hero. But yeah, I think this is kind of setting up, like, again, you know, so many things in the show were like, why doesn't he just tell him everything and then he believes him? It's like, because it's a fucking teenage drama.
Yeah.
That needs these hurdles and obstacles.
Also forget, so, like, yeah, go ahead.
Am I hearing that we're fans of Sandy? Because that's not my takeaway from this episode at all.
Oh, no.
You're about to get kicked off this podcast.
Oh,
with
no.
Maybe I just came in at a weird Sandy moment. I get that he and Ryan, I guess, have a relationship that builds, like, is a little...
Well, he's typically the biggest Ryan supporter. It's actually really weird this episode how, like, on the fence he is about Ryan, like, as a person. You know, it's very strange. But it does, I thought, like, lead to some really good Sandy moments near the end of the episode, for sure.
Yeah, one of my favorite Sandy moments happens towards
the end.
I want to dig into that a little more. Sandy left a bad taste in your mouth after this one?
He did, yeah. I couldn't figure out why the dad was so involved in all of their drama. It seemed like he should be a side character, but instead he was, like, really mixing it up with everybody all the time.
He does that.
I kept feeling like, hey, man, get out of there. What are you doing?
Distant?
Yeah.
You know, Sandy's also not Ryan's father, right?
Yeah. It did take me a minute to kind of figure it out. So the only thing I knew about the show going in was, like, the little blurb about the show when you go into it, which is like, a troubled youth finds his way in paradise, navigating, like, the OC. It's like, yep. Okay, oh, he's the troubled youth. Okay, he doesn't fit in with all of these people exactly.
Andy was his lawyer that, like,
yeah. Yeah. I read that after the episode. I was like, okay, so the only thing I need to know is, like, how did he actually get in with all these people? So, yeah, I read that.
It is, like... Because he does say in the scene later, he's like, do you think it was a mistake bringing him in? Which is the first time we've ever heard him say that. And but it is kind of, yeah, because, you know, last episode is when he, like, got expelled from school for breaking into the, like, he broke into, like, the file room. And, like, he's doing some pretty, like, un-Ryan stuff. Yeah. But still.
Out of character a little bit, but I think it's, like, kind of within reason, considering how much Oliver's, like, gaslighting him the whole time and just, like,
but Fu's right, Sandy is involved with everybody's, all his kids' storylines all the time. He's just always, like, inserting himself in a way that maybe Ryan can be, like, if I was Seth, I'd probably be like, can you just, like, let me hang out with my friends and not be here?
His involvement with Seth, I was like, what are you doing? Why are you here?
Seth needed to hear the sage advice that Sandy was giving.
It's kind of hard to hate him because he's always giving good advice and he always cares so much and he's never, like, I don't know. He's never, like, exploiting his power or anything. He's always a good dude. in the
our dad never, like, I couldn't even convince them to learn my friend's names. He just had no interest in my social life at all.
Upstairs, he's like, baseball cap, red t-shirt, mustache cap. That's great. So then, yeah, we've Ryan. So Sandy, like, he does this real, like, kind of new age dad thing where he says, like, you're free to do whatever you want. Like, you're free to leave, go if you want to go. But if you want to stay in this house, if you want to be a Cohen, you're grounded, essentially. Which is interesting. You don't hear that too often. So then we go to credits. So Ryan's suspended and grounded, and he pretty much just, like, isolates himself in the pool house for a lot of the episode.
Have you ever heard that the theme song, the California, that
famous? Yes. Yeah, that was good stuff.
Did you associate it with this show at all? I know you'd never seen it, but, like, the two seem married in, like, popular culture.
Yeah. It mm-hmm. I definitely associated it with a teenage drama type show.
Yeah.
Even Gossip Girl, I don't know.
Was this one? Maybe it's in Gossip Girl too. I don't know.
It'd be a weird song for Dawson's Creek. Like, does this take place, like, in rural North Carolina?
Dawson always wanted to be a director. California, where he comes. So we get out of the credits, and we come back from commercial, and we're in the pool house. And we get, like, a little montage of Ryan killing time to Love of the Loveless by the band Eels, which is one of my wife's favorite bands.
I thought of her when I heard it.
Yeah.
And we hear it multiple times throughout this episode. It is a great song.
Yeah. It's a great on board montage kind of song.
And they are such a recognizable band, by the way. Like, I feel like from the first notes in that song, you're like, is this the Eels? And then he starts singing, you're like, oh, yeah.
The Eels.
It's like the second or third Eel song that we've heard on the show, which is cool.
Yeah, and they're like a pretty, they're kind of a different band than what you normally hear on there, right? I feel like they feel a little bit more mature, but maybe not at that time. Maybe they were a high school band. They seem like a college rock, you know, like a college rock station band to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ashley discovered them. She used to go to, like, Borders and just, like, scan the CDs and stuff of, like, new music. And that's how she, like, found new music. I think she found Eels that way.
She talked about them a lot on my high school iPod.
Yeah, yeah. Another Kitty Wing crossover.
Wow.
We'll save the plugs for the end.
I think. I sprinkle them in throughout.
But, yeah, they've got, like, well, I was actually talking with her about them today. And she was talking about how, like, sad all of their music is. I was like, oh, it's like, oh, my girlfriend broke up with me. And she's like, no, no, all the songs are about, like death is coming.
Yeah.
How do I deal with that? I was like, oh, that's, like, real, like, sad shit. Yeah, like.
And it's still, like, melodic pop kind of sounding, which I always really like that. Like, an upbeat song about death I'm always into.
Yeah, like the Smiths or something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. What was I about to say about the Eels? I don't remember. Move on.
It's all right. They'll come back up.
Yeah.
A couple times throughout the episode, so you'll have another chance. So yeah, Ryan's just fucking off in the pool house. We go to Harbor School.
Wait, I just real quick have to say. So the Eels song is playing. He's reading Cavalier and Clay. That's important. That'll be throughout the episode. It comes up at the end. Then he's reading, like, a stack of comic books. Then he's doing sit-ups. And, like, it's a montage, so you're like, man, this is how he spent the whole day. Then he looks at his alarm clock, and it says 8 a.m. Fucking time! What time did he wake up? And B, what time did Sandy come in and talk to him? Like, it was so early in the morning, and he was, like, fully dressed.
Crack of dawn.
8 a.m.
Hey, you got a minute to talk? 6 a.m.
Dude, yeah, that is an interesting. Yeah, the like, time doesn't always work out perfectly in this show. Like, right?
Oh, yeah, I have a note about something that really bugged me. We'll get to it later on, time-wise. I'll remember.
But I do remember, like, as a kid, staying home from school and stuff, like, yeah, days felt like they would just drag, you know? Like, if you were homesick or something, I feel like, you know, it would feel like forever, and I would look at the clock, and it'd be, like, 10 a.m. or something.
Yeah, I remember staying home sick and just doing sit-ups. My dad walking into my room in a suit.
Yeah, I thought the only thing I was thinking during the scene was like, does he not have a television? But I guess if he was in a,
so bored.
I now realize he was in a pool house, so maybe that makes sense. Like
that's his room, is that entire house. And I always think about like how butthurt I'd be if I was Seth, being like, I'm your son. I'm 16 and I have to live in my tiny little room next to yours. It's a house.
Fair point. So then we go, yeah, we're at Harbor School. We're outside. It's the morning. Marissa and Summer are walking and talking. We do a one-er here, so it's all done in one shot, which is ambitious. Summer's like, why did Ryan beat up Oliver? And Marissa's like, that's what Ryan does. He punches people instead of talking to them. And it made me think, when's the last time Ryan punched somebody? Was it when the rival school's bully water polo team wanted to fight Luke because they were like giving him shit about his dad?
Yeah, probably. And did anybody even know about that?
And yeah, that was Luke.
Marissa. Cillian was maybe like the last one that people saw, and that was forever ago.
Where?
Cotillion, or the debut, whatever they called it in the show. Did
punch a kid in Tijuana.
He punched Luke into you.
Right. But again, that was nobody really knew about that besides, oh, I guess Marissa knew. Actually, did Marissa know? She was off in an alley high on
She was, because she...
But yeah, that's like, and how long ago? That was...
Bruce Space, as we talk about past episodes.
Why would he punch Luke? What?
Luke used to be...
When we get to Luke, we'll tell you a little bit about who Luke used to be.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So come a long way.
Luke,
I guess.
Oliver, when this show started, he was like, you know, the jock, preppy, like, antagonist to Ryan. Ryan and Marissa obviously love at first sight, right? Luke and Marissa were an item, like, since forever. Since, like, fifth grade, they were together. And they were, like, the popular kids. And so Luke immediately felt threatened by Ryan. And so like every time they were like at a party together or whatever, they would fight like for the first like 4 or 5 episodes of this show. Like every time they got together, they would fight each other. And now, and then over time, you know, Ryan got with Marissa and they were like, well, what do we do with Luke now? And they just turned him into like a puppy dog. They turned him into like this like, loyal, like kind of dopey, funny comic relief character.
It's the fastest, what do they call it, Ned Flandersing of a character ever in a TV show. I mean, it's like 5 episodes and then they're just like, we don't know what to do with him. Make him the comic relief. I mean, that's like the third or fourth season thing for most characters. He gets in like 6 episodes.
Yeah.
The very first note I wrote about Luke was like, he seems pretty sensible.
He used to use a lot of gay slurs.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go.
He's come a long way.
He was Seth's bully. Yeah, he was. But I mean, this is episode what, 18? I mean, it's not that long.
So much time has passed.
You remember high school though? You were one way one day, and the next day you were just a totally different person. You know?
Yeah, totally. Hey, I noticed in this opening credits, which maybe you guys have talked about this before, but is Mick G an executive producer on the show?
Yes. There is.
Weird.
G.
He directed Charlie's Angels. He
directed Terminator Salvation.
Oh yeah.
Music videos. He was the guy that like Christian Bale. Well, he wasn't the guy Christian Bale was yelling at. But like at some point in his rant, you remember the Christian Bale?
Yeah, he calls him out. He says, "Mick G."
Mick G.
Also, Mick G.
It makes me like totally like just like is like, oh, I was somewhere else. Like I didn't even think that happened. Like he totally like doesn't do anything.
I think if you had like a screen name like McG when you were working with people, you'd be like, you can call me, you know, Charles or whatever your actual name is. But Mick. Nope, not McG.
You call me Mick, you call me G, or you call me McG. That's or Mr. McG.
I guess he had his hand Mr. McG, sir. I guess he just had his hand in a lot of kitchens or whatever that
I mean,
is. That's it.
Hot in 2003 when
yeah.
So yeah. Like he probably had like a lot of influence. What got greenlit. Anywho, back to Summer and Marissa. So Summer's talking to Marissa about Ryan. She's like, Ryan's not stupid. There had to be a reason why he beat up Oliver. And Marissa's like, well, Ryan thinks Oliver's in love with me. And Summer's like, well, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously he is. And Marissa's like, no, we're just friends. It's like, okay, sure.
Which is kind of like the first time we've
somebody really... Somebody calls it out.
Yeah.
Like
everybody. Which happens a lot in this episode.
But it is funny how much deniability they've had for this entire, like, arc, and then all of a sudden everybody's just like, yeah, totally, he's skeezy and he's in love with you. Like, everybody just gets on board with it seemingly out of nowhere. There was no, like, triggering event. Yeah. They're just all like, oh, yeah, we believe Ryan now, I guess.
Well, we at least believe that Oliver is in love with Marissa.
Yeah.
Because all they do is spend time together. In fact, Summer's like, she realizes they're both single now because Marissa said she broke up with Ryan. And she's like, well, let's hang out. Fuck boys. And Marissa's like, well, I can't hang out today because I'm hanging out with Oliver, obviously. And then this weekend, she's supposed to stay with her mom, Julie, next door to the Coens. So I don't know if you picked up on that, Foo, but Julie Cooper lives next door to the Coens, which was where Ryan and Marissa met.
That was the one point that I had the text. Thing. Like, I paused the show and texted Muhammad.
It made me laugh so hard.
Wait. Are they neighbors?
You were like, in the middle of the episode, you said you wanted to go into it blind, but I got that one text that was just like, are they neighbors? And I was like, yeah. And you're like, okay. I get it now. I was like, yeah. That's the only thing you need clarification.
Which is pretty late in the episode.
Everything else like kind of fell into place. That moment was very confusing. But
it was all
along the same lines. I think this conversation between Summer and Marissa, like for me, I felt like they were just explaining everything that was going on to me. Like, it's like, oh, okay, thanks, lady. This is very helpful.
I mean, that's a lot of the dialogue in this show. It's all like driving the plot, recapping things.
Very helpful.
Of character relationships and stuff.
I'll say this conversation, Marissa's half, and kind of a hot take. It did make me feel like I kind of understood why Marissa is into Oliver. At least on a basic level. Like, it is still strange that she doesn't see what's going on and doesn't think he's, like, at least pretty controlling of her. But I was like, that's right. Ryan doesn't talk at all. And Marissa's going through, like, the most intense emotional, like, she's in therapy and so is Oliver. She's had problems with drugs and alcohol and so is Oliver. Like, he's, like, the Summer can't relate to that. And Ryan... If Ryan could relate, like when she has problems like that with Ryan, I was thinking about the DUI thing.
Yeah.
And Ryan just kind of gets like angry with her. He's not really understanding at all, you know? I mean, Oliver sucks, don't get me wrong. And it's pretty it's pretty ridiculous that Marissa doesn't see it.
Yeah.
I was like, I could see why somebody in Marissa's shoes would probably be rejecting the Ryans and Seths and Summers in her life and gravitating towards somebody like Oliver Trask.
Yeah, that's her whole, like, that's what she says every time. She's like, well, you know, I can talk to him.
Yeah.
It's supposed to make your blood boil because you're like, why can't you talk to your boyfriend, Ryan? It's like, well, because he's not really good at communicating.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is a good point. So then we jump over to the cafe. We're with Anna and Seth. Anna's like, how's Ryan doing? And Seth's like, fine, I guess. And he hasn't really, I guess, talked to Ryan too much because Ryan didn't heed Seth's advice about, like, the letter and stuff. So I guess that's kind of like, well, what's the point of, you know, dealing, like, trying to mend?
Yeah, he's kind of mad at him, it seems like. And also, again, like, he knows Ryan doesn't really talk much, and he tried to give him some advice and he didn't take it, so he's like, well, I'm gonna give him a space.
Yeah, so, which again is why Ryan's just in his little fortress of solitude. Which,
comic book reference.
Anna's kind of concerned. She's kind of like, well, what the hell? Like, that's your brother. Like, you need to, like, talk to him. He's going through some shit. They run into Marissa and Summer in the hallway. It is really awkward when the four of them are in the hallway. And then Oliver's screeching voice breaks up the tension.
It's so bad. I wrote it down. It was so annoying.
Guys.
He says, what up, what up?
Yeah, he says, what up, what up. The thing, though, about, like, the awkwardness before he even showed up was, I did have that moment of, like, oh, yeah, they're all friends because of Ryan. Like,
yep,
right. You know, Seth and Marissa were neighbors, but they weren't friends, and Summer didn't even really know that Seth existed. So I was like, oh, yeah, the thing that brought us all together isn't here anymore. And so,
it might not be kind of, yeah, part of this thing anymore so much, yeah.
Yeah, and then not to fear, guys, because, what up, what up? And it was just like, Oh, and then this.
Are you want to do an Oliver impression? We all.
I don't feel like I know him well enough at this point. This is my very first impression of Oliver.
And what do you think?
I wrote down, Oliver seems like a real douche.
I think that's the vibe the show's going for. Is like, oh, a straight up douche.
I don't know that even I saw the fight in the previously on, but I don't think I caught him, like, as the definite villain or antagonist right away. They seem buddy-buddy with everybody, and I picked up on it, though.
Yeah.
Is it apparent that he's kind of the villain right away, or, like, did he come off as, like, a part of the gang?
Well, from Marissa and Summer's conversation before, it kind of seemed like he was the new, you know, boyfriend, and so, like, there was some, you know, awkwardness there, but not that he was, like, straight up insane or the bad guy. Just that, well, of course he and Ryan aren't gonna get along real well because he's the new guy and he's the old guy.
You didn't get to see the scene where everybody was having a good time indoors and then the camera pulled out to show Oliver standing watching them in the window, like, cutting his own hair or whatever he was doing in that scene. It's a real scene, and it was crazy.
It was the way they ended an episode. Like,
wow.
They faded to black on Oliver just, like, twitching, like, standing in the window watching them have a good time. And it was the eeriest. It was, like, one of the scariest things I've ever seen.
It was legit scary.
So, because that was, like, the intro to Oliver. That was, like, the second episode we ever saw him, and so you didn't really know anything about this kid, and then you saw him, like, stalking them, and it was just very unsettling.
The show doesn't leave you as an audience member in the shoes of anybody other than Ryan when it comes out. There's, like, no moment with Oliver where you're like, well, maybe he's okay and Ryan's overreacting. Like, they establish him as being a manipulative and crazy person right from the get-go.
Yeah.
So maybe to the show's detriment. Maybe, like, to the excitement's detriment, you know what I mean?
I think it could have benefited from them balancing him a little bit better.
Yeah.
Just playing him a little differently, like, maybe casting him with somebody else, or, like, making him more charming, or, like, he needed more redeemable qualities.
Yeah, he shouldn't have been, like, annoying.
Yeah.
He could have been, like, charming and then also manipulative and crazy, but instead he's just also, like,
he's just
irritatingly annoying.
That's the thing, is that scene you talked about where the end of that episode where he's standing outside is, like, it creeped me out. And I was like, oh shit, he's going to be like a creepy guy now. But other than that scene, really, he's just like his, you want an antagonist to like really have this like thing about him. And Oliver's thing about him is that he's like whiny and really mean. Yeah. And you're like, I'm not scared of this guy. Like, this guy poses no threat other than, like, he's you know, can he's manipulative. But for the most part, he's just kind of sniveling and just like,
yeah.
Bad.
So, yeah, he walks in with his oversized blazer or whatever. And
his busted ass lip. I love that you hear, what up, and you're like, here he comes. And then you see him, and it's just like,
it looks bad. And he's like, hey, let's all go to the Alps or something this weekend to ski or whatever. Because he's always like planning crazy trips for them. And then Marissa's like, dude, your lip. And Oliver's like, I was hoping it made the transition from scary to sexy. Like, as he's like looking right at Marissa. And
Marissa laughs like it's the funniest fucking joke she's ever heard, by the way. Her reaction is insane. Like, I was like, what?
They have a scene together where it's the two of them, and I hate it so much. It's like, it's the hardest scene to get through, because you just realize, like, these are two like terrible characters. There's like nothing enjoyable about watching them together. So it doesn't look sexy, Oliver. I'm sorry. It looks like fucking herpes. So he takes Marissa's arm. Like, she wraps her arm around his arm as they like go to class together. Like, they're doing very couple-y stuff. Yeah. But they're just friends.
This is like the first like summer, and Seth and Anna are all looking like, maybe Oliver is bad news. It's like the first time they've all kind of had this realization.
They're like, why is he happy? Like, he's, yeah. Like, he just got his ass beat. And then Summer's like, yeah, well, why wouldn't he be happy? Like, he got rid of Ryan, and he has Marissa all to himself now. And I'm like, just fucking let Marissa go be with Oliver, because they both...
I felt that way this entire, like, saga, even from Ryan's standpoint, especially actually in this episode.
Yeah.
Which, granted, eventually Marissa was actually in danger, but, like, I kept thinking, if I was friends with Ryan, I would just be like, dude, she's acting crazy, let her go act crazy with that guy. He sucks, she sucks, move on. Like, Ryan gets, like, obsessive in this moment. Again, it turns out to be kind of the right call, because then she's in a dangerous situation, but there was no way he could have known that.
Yeah, there's no way he could have predicted it would have ended the way it ended.
Yeah.
You're right. He is like kind of like weirdly protected.
He uses the fact that Oliver tried to kill himself, by the way, as like a sign that he's dangerous, which, yeah. I guess it means that he's, you know, mentally not well, but it's also like more like sad. But he does, like, he's like, he slit his wrist, we gotta protect Marissa.
Yeah,
like, shouldn't you want to protect Oliver?
It definitely, that whole, because that comes up a few times, and it's definitely very much a like, oh yeah, in 2003 mental health was seen,
he's crazy,
completely yeah. differently than it is now. And yeah, that's one of those things that
yeah, kind of swept that back under the rug, like the fact that he like tried to kill himself over a girl. People just dismiss that in this episode, but Ryan's the only person who's like bringing that up, like, guys, this is a huge red flag. Mm-hmm. So then we cut over to Kirsten's office, time to hang out with the grown-ups. Kirsten and Sandy are eating lunch together. This is where Sandy like second guesses his decision to let Ryan into their house, and Kirsten, yeah, for Ryan here, she's like, he's a good kid, he's not perfect, but we'll work on it, everything's gonna be fine, bless you Kirsten, you're an angel.
Sandy, which is important, because Foo, originally when Sandy brought Ryan home, Kirsten was not on board. She was like, he can stay for the weekend and then he's gotta go. Like, it took her a few episodes to warm up to him.
Yeah,
it was very painful for me watching Sandy say those things. I was like, oh, my stomach, oh.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. But a bunch of dudes in like coveralls come in, and they literally start taking the furniture that they're sitting in, which is in the back of the office. So they have to pick up the chairs that Sandy and Kirsten are sitting in, and then walk around coffee tables and like couches and desks to get out of the office. I'm like, why don't you start in the front?
Also, what fucking hurry were those guys in that they were just like, we're here to move things? And Kirsten's like, what? I don't know about this. And they're like, doesn't matter. Pick it up.
We got to
work it out. Also, doesn't matter if you're questioning what we're doing here. We're grabbing your table and moving it.
There's 20 of them. Like, it's an army of movers. It's not just two guys like, we're moving your stuff. It's just like this, like troops come marching in blue coveralls and they just start picking up furniture.
Yeah, and so they're like, what the fuck's going on? Julie enters. She's like, Kirsten, you're supposed to be at lunch. And then they're like, well, we ordered in. So Julie's she just got hired as the interior designer or whatever for the company. And she's redecorating the entire office, apparently in one lunch hour, and which is a great idea.
Kayla, you have 20 movers. It's easier to do.
More power to you. But Caleb enters. Caleb is Foo. I don't know if you.
wait. Foo. What do you think this dynamic is?
I was gonna say, this scene is the height of my confusion. Between these characters.
Break it down.
Because, okay, so at one point also, I don't think they, I'm hearing Caleb's name for the first time. He's the old man. I don't think they mentioned his name the whole episode, so I just wrote Charles Widmore from Lost every single time. Charles
Widmore, baby!
Yeah. So you got him. I guess at some point they call Kristen Kiki, and I thought that was two people. And then you've got Julie, who was hired in, but who I didn't realize was Marissa's mom. All of this was very confusing. Caleb is Kristen's dad, right? So
yes,
none of that was apparent.
And Julie's boyfriend.
Correct. Yeah,
it's a lot of relationships in one room.
This scene was very tough for me. It you made sense later on.
That was great.
Yeah. I got, like I said, by the end of this episode, I felt like, all right, yeah, I got everybody. We're all in now. But in this scene, in real time, I was very confused.
I feel like an asshole, but it's Kirsten.
Oh, my bad.
Kirsten. But everything else, fucking great.
Close. I just call her Kiki. We're that
close. Well, if you knew her, you'd know that she hates being called Kiki.
Lovely. Who calls her Kiki? Was that her dad that
her
called
dad
her Kiki?
Her dad does, yeah.
It's even weirder.
Kirsten has a line when Julie first walks in where she goes, Julie, what are you doing? And like puts her arms on her hips. And I just imagined a studio audience like cheering and laughing.
Yeah.
It's her catchphrase.
Pause.
They're just waiting for that line every episode. They go, hey, she said it!
Julie fucking Kramers into the door. Applause break.
So Caleb, Charles Widmore, enters, and he is pissed that his massage chair is gone. And
I need my chair.
My massage chair. So Julie.
Oh, Jask. Sorry, that's the only one I can do.
Julie reassures him that everything will be good as new when he gets back from lunch, or when they get back from lunch, rather. She invites Sandy and Kirsten because they're celebrating Julie's new position. Sandy says, fuck no, because he both of them. He hates Caleb and Julie. As the dudes are, like, literally take all of her furniture, Kirsten says, but I have work to do. I feel like the audience <won't>. Yeah! And then Sandy says, you said it yourself, everything's going to be fine. Callback.
Market.
The first callback.
Market.
And that's what they call a callback in comedy, Ron.
Market.
We love Foo. This show loves callbacks, and so do we, Foo.
Fantastic.
I don't know if there was a lot in this episode.
There aren't. I caught.
I don't think I caught I counted any.
So sometimes they'll do callbacks to like previous episodes, and there is a callback to episode 1 in this
sure episode. Is.
Is there? I missed it. Ooh, I'm excited. Ooh, wow.
It's a good one. So then we go over to Cohen's game room. Ryan's watching TV, bored as fuck, listening to that Eels song again.
Yeah. You think that's, what is it, diegetic? You guys have talked about this on the podcast. He's just playing that song on a loop.
Also watching TV.
Why do you keep listening to the same Eels song? Oh, it's my bored music.
Like, fucking self-deprecating music. He picks up, he sees that it's like noon, and he picks up the phone because he knows, I guess he knows, my thought is like, he knows Marissa's on lunch break right now, so I'm going to call her. And he like kind of hesitates, is he going to call her? We don't know. So then we cut over to the lunch veranda at Harbor. Oliver,
Drew, this is their lunch room.
I think I wrote down at least twice, this is a high school?
Very
this pretty. Is where rich people go to school.
I guess.
It is a beautiful campus.
Yeah.
Golly.
Any college I've even ever been to.
Yeah.
they're on the lunch veranda. Oliver is practically begging Marissa to come to Mammoth this weekend, which I don't know where that is. I assume Colorado or something.
The periodic era. I don't know what I'm talking about, but whatever era. Metazoic? Pediatric?
Everything you're saying is right.
Why didn't I just go with Jurassic? There's a park named after it.
Marissa seems hesitant. Luke enters with
when you were saying that they had a scene where they have a few scenes where it's just the two of them, and this was the first one where I was just like, God, something needs to happen in this scene. And our fucking boy comes in with two lunches and saves the fucking scene.
God, I couldn't have stood a scene with just Marissa and Oliver.
This was also like the most sense Luke has ever made. Like, his arguments with Oliver were like dead on, where I was like, yeah, Luke's so right, Oliver.
We know from the last episode that Luke straight up says, like, I don't trust that guy. And so Luke is the one. Luke is Ryan's,
he's the
like,
first one, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And so, like, they're, like, yeah, Luke doesn't have the rose-tinted glasses or whatever. So he's given Oliver some fucking sass in this scene. Like, he's fucking talking back. Also, Luke is still, like, a big buff dude who's, like, I'll fight Oliver.
Yeah, I'm not scared of this guy. I only took two notes for this scene, and one is Oliver's hair. There's so much of it. And the second is Luke is the most handsome man in 2003. And, like, I never really noticed it before this scene, but he is stunning. He's got, like, so many face bones. Like, his jaw is insane. He's chiseled. He's got amazing hair.
A lot of teeth.
Perfect smile, beautiful eyes.
He's more attractive, like, now, like in the later episodes where he's like a good dude. I think being a character makes you more attractive.
Definitely. I probably didn't notice it before because he was throwing out gay slurs every other line. Yeah.
So tell me again, like, how does he go from that guy to, like, Ryan's good buddy? Like, is there a moment where, like,
there's a good story?
Yes, it's actually a really good story.
How much time you got?
Yeah. I'll try to give you the,
I don't know,
but basically, like, Luke has lived, like, you know, very privileged life, like most of these kids. Perfect family, you know, he's got, like, little brothers, and dad, mom love each other. He finds out in one episode, like, he and Ryan are doing a report together, and they go to his dad's dealership. His dad's like a Porsche dealer or something. They find out that his dad is having an affair with his partner, who is a man, at the dealership. They, like, see them, like, making out, and it, like, fucks Luke up, and then everybody in town finds out, and then Luke, who was, like, you know, captain of the water polo team, popular guy in school or whatever, start, like, all of a sudden, like, overnight becomes, like, one of the outcast kids because he has a gay dad, because it's 2003.
And water polo at the rich school is the football team. Like, he's the captain of the football team, basically.
Yeah, and he gets bullied for like an afternoon, and he's like, I've seen the error of my ways.
Where his character begins the turn, and it happens kind of over the course of the next, you know, several episodes. But basically, like, Ryan sticks up for him, like, gets his back, even though he's done nothing but give Ryan shit the whole time since he, like, moved into town. And so he kind of, like, reevaluates, like, who his friends are and stuff, and he starts hanging out with these kids. And then he becomes a golden retriever.
Big fan of Luke.
Yeah.
I wrote at one point, I think it was when Luke shows up and, well, it says he's good doing the, like, we'll get to it. But I did write, I wrote the L in Luke stands for loyal.
And the U stands for unique. Unique fella. All right. So Luke's, so Luke enters with his two lunches. Oliver's like, Luke, shouldn't Marissa come to Mammoth this weekend to get away from Ryan? And Luke's like, well, isn't that up to Marissa? Like, why? Like, why are you asking me that? And then Ryan calls Marissa. She doesn't answer. She screens his call. And then Luke's like, well, aren't you going to answer your phone? And Oliver's like, well, she's not talking to Ryan right now. It looks like, is she still talking to me, or are you doing all the talking for her?
And yeah, I stood up on my chair and raised my hands in the air. Yeah.
That's a great, such a great line. And then Luke's kind of like, fuck you guys.
Yeah, he really
like, why did I come to sit with you? I'm taking my two lunches.
Marissa's probably like, I don't know, you cheated on me. We haven't really talked about it.
You just kind of moved right over to Ryan. Started tagging along and like everybody was okay with it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all that aside, Luke was the scene. He just gets up and leaves. Marissa's like, I'm going to go get dessert. So Oliver's sitting there by himself. He grabs Marissa's phone. He listens to Ryan's voicemail. Ryan says, meet me at the library after school. I want to talk. He deletes the voicemail, which I say is way worse than the whole letter incident, because Ryan admitted that he read the letter to Marissa. You know, like he wasn't like sneaky about it like that. And then Oliver's just doing this shit to be shady.
Well, yeah, Oliver's an asshole. Also, nothing good has ever come in any scene of television ever when someone leaves their phone. Like, it's always something bad happens.
That's why I always take it with me. When I go, bringing my phone. I don't know what's going to happen. So then we go outside of the school, we're on the exterior of the school. Seth and Anna. Anna's like, hey, let's get comics after school. Seth's like, nah, I'm going to check on my boy, Ryan. Summer enters and she's like, what are you doing after school? And Anna's like, comics. And Summer's like, I'm in. And Seth's like, really? And then Anna's like, Seth, weren't you going to check on Ryan? And they see Ryan in the parking lot. They see him like walking through the parking lot, I guess, to go meet Marissa. And Seth.
Sue, at the beginning of the show, Seth was absolutely in love with Summer and had been his whole entire life. And she had never
named even his sailboat after her, which is not something they talk about anymore.
No. But they, yeah. And so basically, then he got a girlfriend, and then Summer kind of started recognizing him now. And so now that's why he's still like, yeah, you can come read comics with us. Because he's still has a thing for her.
Holding a flame for Summer while he's dating Anna. And they're all trying to be friends because they had this whole love triangle thing going and it never really fizzled out. The only thing now is that Seth and Anna are officially a couple and Summer is the third wheel.
This is also, this is where Seth, I mean, obviously it comes to a head at the end of the episode, but this is where he really starts becoming shitty to Anna. But I wrote that it was like, there are moments in this show, and I talked about it on the first episode I was on, that feel so real high school to me. And the type of shitty that Seth is being to Anna, I thought was like so dead on the way that you can be shitty to your girlfriend in high school or guys were shitty. You know, it's like, it's just the sort of disinterested to a point that you're not, it's so inconsiderate, but it's not really like mean or malicious. It's just like you've completely lost interest in this person that you wanted to be with, but now you're with them, and it's just like, I guess I don't really like you that much.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because it took me a while to realize that they were a couple, that Seth and Anna were a couple. Like, because it seemed like there's three friends and I felt like, oh, she really has a thing for him and he's not picking up on it. And, you know, he's kind of clueless about all that. And then I found out like, oh, no, wait, they're actually dating. He, you know, is just ignoring her. I was like, wow. Okay.
They did. I think the writers on the show did a good job with their relationship in general. You know, I hated Anna when she first arrived, but it was because she was just a mimic of all the same things. I mean, literally every line she has in that first episode is just like saying something that Seth likes. So Seth can be like, oh, a girl that likes things that I like. But they like, they don't even like sit there and try to retcon that. They keep that up, but they show how that makes Seth less interested in over time. She's not at all challenging to him, not interesting to him. Yeah. And it works. It feels real. It feels like real high school.
It's another with high school relationships where you're looking for sameness. Like you're looking for somebody who is into the things that you're into when you're in high school. Because you recognize things like compatibility or whatever. You're just like, I want somebody who's like in the same clique as I am, in the same bands as I am, whatever.
Mm-hmm. It's also like that's so much of what you know how to talk about in high school.
Right.
It's hard to talk to somebody of the opposite sex or somebody that you're sexually attracted to anyway. Then to add in the fact that it's like, oh, I can't just rely on my knowledge of Christopher Lambert movies. That was me. now I really don't know how to talk to them.
We get it. You got laid a lot now.
all the Highlander groupies were all over me.
Raiden from Mortal Kombat?
I also wrote that Seth's outfit in this scene. You guys talked about recognizing his clothes a lot. This is how I dress definitely like senior year up until like my 20s. He's wearing like a kind of a clubby button up with a like faux motorcycle jacket, like a members only jacket over it and a messenger bag. I was like, oh yeah, that was straight up my outfit for a while.
That was the look, man. That was the 2003, 2004 look.
Big time. And it's all because of Seth Cohen. He was the trick. So Seth goes, he excuses himself and goes over to Ryan. Ryan's like, I got to talk to Marissa. And Seth reasonably is like, but here in the place that you are suspended from? And Ryan's like, she won't answer my calls. I knew I could find her here. Seth's like, let Marissa make her own decisions. Ryan's like, Oliver's crazy. He's unstable. He's violent. He's obsessive. Seth's like, okay, he's crazy, but this isn't the way to do this. And Ryan's just like, gotta go by. So, like, Seth, I think, like, made a good faith effort to intervene there, but Ryan just wasn't hearing it. Because Ryan's like, he's kind of going nuts in the pool house there. And he's very worried about Marissa.
You can only listen to that Eel song so many times in a row before you're just like, fuck it. I'm going to go be self-destructive.
Yeah, I'm going to go do something very dumb. We go to the library. Ryan's waiting for Marissa. Fucking Oliver slithers out from behind a bookshelf. And he's like, she told me to tell you she's not coming. And don't call her or try to see her again or she's going to get a restraining order. And Ryan goes, oh yeah, what's that like? Fucking zing!
Sit up on my chair and raise my arms in the air again.
That was a really good one.
It was a really good one for Ryan, I'll say. It wasn't the most clever thing. It was a little, I'm rubber and you're glue. Like, good on you, Ryan. You're not usually quick with the words.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't just fucking deck him. So Oliver says he didn't press charges because he wants to help Ryan. Tells him to leave and like it's over. And this part I did not like. Oliver goes, it's over. And he starts to walk away. And then Ryan stops him and he goes, hey, it hasn't even begun.
Yeah, that's more Ryan's thing.
Like a badass there, but like in a library in high school, I don't know. It just didn't click for me.
Mitchell, I also really hated his delivery on that, just that whole thing. And I thought, how could they have made that better? And I think I have a way. So,
oh boy,
go with me on this. So Oliver's walking away, and Ryan says, hey, Oliver, it hasn't even begun. And then Oliver looks up and we see a giant hardback version of The Great Gatsby, and it falls and knocks Oliver out, and we look and see that Luke is on the other side of the bookshelf, and he goes, drop The Great Gatsby on him.
Oh God. It's one of the best lines in the whole
thing. Is that like a theoretical callback?
No, that would have been an actual callback, but
no, but it didn't happen. So it's a theoretical mark.
Jay's imagination.
That's in my fanfic.
So was it the last episode? The episode. So like, Luke is obviously like suspicious of Oliver. He's on Ryan's side, and we think that he improvised this line because we're like, this doesn't make any sense. And so he goes like, Ryan, you just say the word and I'll drop The Great Gatsby. He's like that's...
And then walks off.
And he walks away, like fucking struts away, like with swagger. Like,
think he means how he would stand on his porch and reach out to the light? That he'll do that.
That's the move, yeah.
A very interesting decision.
Or he'll hit him with a car, which I guess would be the... Oh, I don't remember that character's name. The Robert Redford? No, not it wasn't Robert Redford in the movie. Doesn't matter. Daisy, his boyfriend. Buchanan. Pat? No, that's a...
Yeah, Pat movie. Buchanan.
You remember Pat Buchanan. We're not here to talk about great American literature. We're
here to talk
about great American television.
Unless that great American literature is knocking out Oliver in my fan fiction.
Or if we're talking about the novelization of the first season of the OC.
Which should be in the Library of Congress. So we dip to commercial, then we come back and we're in the Coen's kitchen. It's the next morning. Kirsten has turned the kitchen into her office.
They live in
a living room. Not Sandy's office or one of the bedrooms in their house.
The guest room.
Yeah.
She probably has an office too in there. It's such a big house.
What the fuck?
It's weird if she doesn't have a home office, like in her mansion.
Yeah,
right. As busy as she is.
Sandy has an office. I'm sure she does. It's insane. Anyway. So Sandy enters, he's looking for coffee. He's begging Kirsten to talk to Julie. Kirsten explains that there's like no reasoning with Julie and that she's driving everybody crazy.
Guys, we got our breakfast scene, by the way. It wasn't at the beginning of the episode.
There
it is.
It's kind of...
Guys, I actually picked up on this too because I listened to the last episode you were on, Muhammad.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I'm in on this. I got it.
Yeah, they had a breakfast scene. They're weird because normally they start the show with the breakfast scene, but we got it here at the middle point.
Well, this episode started at sunrise.
All this has happened before breakfast.
3 a.m.
7 a.m. And all. So Ryan enters. He gets coffee. He exits without really talking to anybody.
Hold on.
Yeah?
I must.
Okay.
So Ryan walks in. Kirsten says, Ryan, there's coffee and cereal and... And they look at what's on the island, and she says, "The model home."
Callback.
Callback.
And that's what they call a callback in comedy, Ryan.
Mark it.
That's a good one. I missed that one.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that's like a callback in name, I guess.
I'm marking it.
Yeah, it counts.
We'll take what we can get here.
It would be like a real callback if he like knocked over the toaster and then lit the model home on fire.
Burned it down.
And she was like, yeah.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
So, Ryan's just kind of, he's still sulking and stuff. So he just kind of exits without really talking. Kirsten feels bad that they're punishing him, but Sandy insists that they got to hang tough. Ding dong doorbell. Kirsten goes to answer it. It's Julie. Julie wants to carpool because they're next door neighbors. They work in the same office. Makes sense to me. Kirsten's like, I'm working from home. And Sandy's trying real hard to get Kirsten to go with Julie. So he invites Julie to have coffee while Kirsten gets ready. So then we cut to the backyard. Julie's out there drinking coffee. Ryan shows up. I think this is a great scene. Like
Julie, I love it. The way she
this was a good scene.
And she like puts the paper down and he's just like standing there like.
Eh. Hey, can we jump back real quick to something that bothered me?
Oh, yeah.
This is another
it's on your mind.
Sort of semantical thing, but I got a lot of them throughout this my watch of this show. So Julie does this thing where she's like talking a lot, but she starts with a, you're not dressed. And then she like goes into like, you know, we got to go to work together and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking this and that and this. And she talks maybe for like 45 seconds, like a long period of time in TV language. But then she turns to Julie and goes, and you're still not dressed. I was like, she was with you this whole time.
She was like,
a minute.
She was like, in her
when did you think she was going to get dressed?
Good point.
That's Julie.
She's like all coked up this morning or something. I don't know. She's
yeah. I did feel bad for Julie in this. I feel bad for Julie in a lot of episodes. Like, she clearly just needs a friend. But yeah. She's just kind of a shitty person, so it's hard for her. But
well, they do a great job of kind of like helping you empathize with Julie, because she has kind of had to like claw her way up from nothing to get to where she is. And so it's kind of like, and it's not, you're right, it's not like a great, she's not a great moral character or role model or anything. But I at least like understand where she's coming from and kind of why she is the way she is. Oliver, I don't fucking get
that. No, right.
But Julie's come a long way from, remember the beginning of the show where she was just like all terrible?
Yeah.
Yeah, but even then you could tell like so much of her shittiness was just her trying to make friends within the community and connect with people and have people like her. Like, she's one of those, you get the feeling that she's just probably deep down super insecure about who she is and if she's worthy of friends and if she's worthy of this lifestyle that she has, and this is feeding a lot into it, but you know, like that's her character.
You gotta keep watching the show because
I'm excited.
Does she generally have a good relationship with Marissa? Like, are they close?
Real bad.
Oh, really?
Like, the worst, actually.
Oh, jeez.
So I think that the show begins, like, she is introduced to the show, like, telling Marissa that she's fat.
Yeah. She's actually, like, a big part of Marissa's problems. Like, the problems that she's going through, they all kind of stem from Julie. And you don't meet her dad in this episode, but he's another situation. He's real loving, but he was like a real bad white collar criminal, did some horrible things, almost went to prison.
Big fun.
But he's also like super loving and has a pretty good relationship with Marissa, so
Julie was annoying to me. I found her pretty annoying, but also I had a lot of sympathy for her for what happens to her in this episode. So I didn't know exactly what I was supposed to think about her.
Yeah, they never really make it. There's not really a clear vision that they're giving you on how to feel about Julie. It's kind of up to the audience. They're never quite like, she's a good guy, but she's not all bad, I guess.
She's got layers.
Yeah.
Right. She kind of goes back and forth from villain to sympathetic, but I just think
she has some questionable moments in this episode.
The actress that portrays Julie just does like such a tremendous job with the character.
She's fucking great.
Yeah. One of the better actors in the show. Not to disparage too many people.
Enjoy watching. Like, like, I can't really stand it when he's on screen. But Julie is like fun to watch, even when she's being terrible.
I'm always surprised, and I know he's achieved plenty of fame in his career, but Peter Gallagher, I mean, he's just a pleasure. He's one of those actors that is just like, he's charming on screen. He's got good screen presence. I like looking at him. It doesn't even matter if he's acting well or not. I'm just like, give me more Peter Gallagher. He's a charming man.
Get a young Peter Gallagher to play Oliver, and it's compelling, right?
Somebody make a deep fake of an entire episode with just Peter Gallagher. Like,
Peter Gallagher making out with Peter Gallagher on the Ferris wheel. So we go to we're in the Cohen's backyard. Julie's drinking her coffee. Yeah, she pulls the newspaper down to see Ryan standing there. Julie's like, "Aren't you late for school?" And Ryan's like, "I got suspended." And Julie's like, "Who'd you beat up this time?" Ryan says, "Well, I guess you haven't talked to Marissa in a while." Julie says, "Well, she's coming to stay with me all weekend." And Ryan's like, "She is?" And Julie's like, "I guess you haven't talked to Marissa in a while." Bam. Like that fucking snappy dialogue. Yeah. Back and forth. I love
it. Their scenes together are always fucking great, Ryan and Julie.
Yeah. I love it.
They're always like contentious, but neither one really has a leg up on the other.
I kind of
forgot what happens in the rest of this episode, like going into watching it this time, and I was like, holy shit, do they like team up to take down Oliver? Like, we both hate each other. Let's put all our differences aside.
Right. They have a common enemy in Oliver, but yeah, that's kind of that's what's interesting about this scene is that Ryan is essentially like, he warns her about Oliver. He's like, you gotta keep her away from this kid. He goes into detail about Oliver slitting his wrist and buying coke. And then Kirsten comes to get Julie, and Julie says, "Stay out of trouble, Ryan," as she leaves. And I'm like, what does that mean? Like, why did she say that? You had such a strong scene. And then she goes, "Stay out of trouble." Like, he's like, no, I'm trying to warn you.
She does have a couple moments. Like, she has that really line that's kind of like a fake out. It really got me, where she's like, he's like, "Oh, there's trouble." And she's like, "Really? That means a lot coming from you." I was like, oh, I bought it for a second.
That's the thing. It's like, she's like Cersei Lannister. It's like the one redeeming quality.
She's like Cersei.
She loves her kids. She loves her kids to death. And she loves Marissa. And she wants nothing more than to have a good relationship with her, even though she fails miserably at that. But yeah, like, so you would think that Ryan coming to her and being like, "Hey, this kid's dangerous," like, and she's hanging out with him all the time, that would like snap or click with Julie, but didn't really happen.
She does call the school and gets Marissa busted because her and Oliver are like ditching.
But spoiler alert for my own notes later on, when Marissa does run away, Julie doesn't do shit about it. Dude. She kind of just moves on with her life and forgets about it.
She's used to Marissa leaving and going and staying with somebody else.
That's pretty much all Marissa's done. She's kind of like, whatever. At least I have another.
She did shout at the car a little bit, so.
Yeah, and then she drives away.
Made an effort.
And she goes, "Meh, I guess she's gone.
Drink another bottle of wine.
Go back to redecorating other people's offices."
There's no pleasing you guys. Sandy's too involved. Julie's not involved. Yeah. What
level of parenting are you looking for here? So then we go to Harbor School. We're outside with Oliver and Marissa. I think this was a scene I hated. Oliver is asking Marissa if she's going to Mammoth. Marissa says she's still her mom. Oliver's like, "If you don't want to hang out this weekend, just tell me." And Marissa's like, "Well, there's nothing more I'd like to do than just blow everything off and hang out." And Oliver's like, "You mean that? You mean that? You Let's do it. I'll have you back by dinner. Let's go to LA. And so fuck them. They leave. They're skipping school to go fuck off wherever.
He says they're going to go eat lunch and then stop by the Troubadour, which I personally have never been to, but I know it's like a concert venue.
Yeah,
like,
it's not a place you stop by.
What show is going to be going on at like 2 p.m. on a school day?
You gotta go see like the front doors of the Troubadour.
This is where the bands play.
I know Rooney. I don't think they ever played here, but I know them.
Rooney's too big for the Troubadour, okay? So they exit, and Seth and Luke are kind of like, they see them leave, and Luke
real quick,
yeah,
love that Seth and Luke are just hanging out now.
Yeah,
Tuds.
It's terrific.
That was a weird shot too. They like pull out to reveal them watching.
Yeah, I liked that.
Yeah, interesting.
So it looks like I don't trust that kid. And Seth says, "Well, you're starting to sound like Ryan." And it's like, well, maybe you should listen to him, Seth. Like, maybe they're not crazy. And Seth's like, you've met Natalie, right? Why would he think that Luke has met Natalie when he hasn't? They've literally only done stuff together with Oliver. Like, anytime Luke has been with Oliver, Seth has been with Oliver.
Anyway. Oh, I have another note about Oliver in this scene, is that this is the worst outfit I've seen so far. And he's wearing
5 shirts.
He's wearing a yellow polo with a striped button up over it that's open. I mean, I don't know if it would be better buttoned, but it's bad either way. And then a blazer over that. I was just like, what? Was this ever in style, or is this just like an insane costuming choice?
It's all oversized. Like, it's all like a size
2. I feel like they go through great lengths to make Oliver look puny all the time and kind of like boyish. Later on, when he's like in his robe and he has his bedhead, he looks like he's like 12. It's so weird.
Lost in New York over here.
Like, I don't know if that's by design or if that actor just sort of looked young at that time and they didn't know how to dress him properly. I don't know.
Well, I think he was supposed to have, like, just gotten out of the shower or something, so he didn't have, like...
Yeah.
As far as his messy hair, but I agree, his fucking outfits are ridiculous.
He does have good hair, though. Or at least a lot of it. I don't know if it's good.
It's very quantity 2000. Over quality there.
It might be. quantity of quality. It looks like, no, I've never met Natalie. Foo, Natalie is supposed to be Oliver's ex-girlfriend. She gets talked about a lot. Oliver's, like, anytime they go anywhere in previous episodes, Oliver's always like, yeah, Natalie's coming. And then whenever they show up, he's like, Natalie couldn't make it. So from the jump, I was like, she's not real.
It's the most obvious fake girlfriend situation to have ever happened.
What's for
and sure. Nobody catches it except for Ryan.
Ryan and Luke are the only people who have doubts. Anyway, so Luke's like, no, I don't know. I've never met Natalie. Seth's like, Ryan doesn't think she's real because she's not. And Luke says, well, Oliver said they went to Pacific, right? This is another high school. Well, I got some friends there. I could ask
around. We can only assume it also has an amazing cafeteria.
If not for Oliver, it's probably got fucking sushi and
Mediterranean food.
Oh yeah,
Moroccan food.
Moroccan. That's what. Moroccan. No, you eat it with your hands, Ryan. You got a flea from Chino.
So Luke's going to check up on that. We go over to Caleb's office.
Luke is about to go do some recon. Like, Luke is...
So oh, yeah, I wrote that. Loyal. I want to watch the Luke and Seth as PIs spinoff.
Yes!
After high school, they opened up a private investigation firm, the two of them solving crimes together.
That'd be great.
You got Seth's the brain and Luke's the muscle, you know?
Good thing. Every few episodes, they remind, like, Seth has to tell a girl that he's working for, like, yeah, Luke used to be my bully back in high school, but, you know, we've learned to work together. It'd be great. Great show.
Rich, yeah, story there. This show could have had a lot of good spinoffs. I think Jay and I came up with didn't we come up with another spinoff?
The Lighthouse that Sandy and
Jay... Oh, yeah, totally.
It's like Cheers, but it's at a restaurant.
So good. Anyway,
I was a white collar criminal who lost millions for my clients.
And I
was a high power. No, you do it. I don't do a good Sandy anyway.
And I was a public defender with too much money. So we opened up a restaurant.
And now we're getting by day by day.
Jazz music and two meatloafs.
We got a little drunk and carried away with the menu one night, and now we have two fucking meatloaves.
Committed to it. Anyway.
Welcome to the Lighthouse.
Back to reality. Caleb's...
For me to tell what's real and what's not. Like, is this, I don't know.
Most
is
of the that Lighthouse
happened. A real thing? Did they really have two meatloaves? I can't. I don't know.
So the Lighthouse is, yes, it's a restaurant that Sandy and Jimmy, Marissa's dad, invested in. They, like, it was closing down, was shutting down, and they bought it. And they were going to, like, renovate it and give it a new menu and bring, like, musical acts and stuff to it. It's really just, like, a one or two episode arc kind of side story thing. But...
No, it's still
does that not come back?
It seems no, real still... wacky for early season one.
There's yeah. A lot of shit like that.
They, you know what? They threw out a lot of lines. And they got a few... catches, few fish.
We haven't quite gotten to like the to me the most out of the blue extra drama thing that happens in this episode.
Yeah,
it's about to happen. But there's like a moment where I was like, "Is that just like somebody pitched this as a storyline?" And they're like, "Might as well fill up the hour." You know?
Yeah. They kind of shoehorn some subplots into these episodes. I think yeah, just possibly to fill time, but. They don't really amount to much. Anyway, so is it Caleb's office where it happens? Is it the adults where this this love happens?
No, it's when Luke goes over to the Cooper's house, to Julie's house.
That's what I thought, too. I thought that's where you were going.
The straight up like note card pinned to a cork board in the writer's room. They're like, well, maybe we could use this here.
That actually has... future repercussions.
Really? I figured.
I was going to ask you guys. I know we're getting ahead, but that was the one plot line that I feel like didn't get resolved for me that I really want to know what happens with.
Oh, you'll find out.
You're going to have to keep watching the show, my friend.
Oh, dear.
They fuck.
All right, so.
Multiple times.
Back here. We're in Caleb's office. Caleb's.
And they show it.
They show it.
Graphically. Awesome. The whole episode.
Caleb's reading papers over a tarped desk. There's like paint cans and shit in his office. Kirsten enters and she's like, do you have a second to talk about Julie? And Caleb's like, close the door. And Caleb,
he goes, I have exactly 1 minute.
Caleb was kind of funny in this scene to me. But Caleb's like, she's driving me crazy. She's always around at the office, at home. She might be in here right now.
He also says, don't get me wrong. I enjoy the woman, which I wrote, Caleb Nichol about his serious girlfriend.
Their wedding vows are really, really passionate.
He just turns around and addresses the crowd and says, I enjoy the woman.
Yeah, their wedding vows are like, I promise to provide you ample allowance every week. Every Friday. Yeah, it's strange, but anyway. So this scene, he tells Kirsten to break up with Julie for him. It isn't funny.
It's bonkers.
It's nuts, right? Like,
can you imagine?
Man, right? Like,
it only led to more confusion for me about how all these people were related. Like, wait. Is that her dad or her boss? Both.
Yes. Both. Her dad, he's like mildly abusive to her whole life, and she'll kind of do anything for him, and she like recognizes that as a flaw in herself, but she kind of just like keeps doing it anyway. And then yeah, so dad boss.
Dad. This is like the weirdest thing that she put up zero fight for.
He was just
like, you want me to break up with your girlfriend for you? All right. Here goes nothing.
So then we cut over to the pool house, and there's that eel song again. Seth enters. He invites him to watch Summer read her first comic book, because who doesn't want to do that? Who doesn't want to watch her read? That sounds fun.
Well, we've established that Ryan has become a fan of comics, but not quite to the level that Seth is, but he definitely enjoys them.
I enjoy comics as well, but I don't like watching other people read comics. That's just...
Seth and Summer were super cute in this scene, and it made me... Summer's my favorite character on the show, and I was just like, that's right. I like them together.
Yeah.
I think they're adorable. They work well together.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I felt really bad because Seth is being a total dick to Anna, who's just sitting there. They're really cute together.
Yeah, they got crazy chemistry.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we cut over to the game room inside Cohen's house. Sandy enters. He says hey to Anna, Seth, and Summer. Seth's showing Summer the comics. Anna kind of like rolls her eyes, and Sandy notices. And Sandy goes into the kitchen, and Anna kind of follows him into the kitchen. And she mentions, like, how crazy it is that she and Seth are, like, into all the same things. And then Kirsten enters, and she's, like, got the groceries. She asks Sandy to help. She exits. Anna's like, what do you and Mrs. Cohen have in common? And Sandy's like, well, we both love Seth. I guess we don't have that much in common. And Anna's like, well, what's the key to a successful relationship? And Kirsten yells at Sandy about the groceries again. And Sandy goes, for Cohen men, patience.
So to your point, I wrote when he's in the room with them while they're watching whatever the comic, the animated series or whatever, or reading comics at that point. When Sandy's in that room, I wrote, what is Sandy doing here? Like, why is he inserting himself into like this teenage hangout moment? Not even checking up on him. He's like, what are you guys doing? What's going on?
They're like, hey, what's it? You guys are down
in the... I wrote that down several times. Why is Sandy here? What is Sandy doing?
It didn't make sense because then he's in the kitchen with Anna and they're achieving everything they needed to achieve. Like, he didn't need to be in that seat directly before.
I think he needed to he needed to see a little bit that the dynamic was
watching Seth. Yeah. Yeah,
you're right, though. He didn't need to go into that room to get to the kitchen. That's kind of the long way to get to the kitchen, to cut through the living room. But yeah, I chalked it up to him just like saying hey to the kids, which isn't that crazy. I don't know. I don't really remember high school that well, but I feel like if I was hanging out in like the living room with some
friends, he just felt invested in a way that was unnatural, like as you said, Fu. And I don't think I really thought about that while I was watching that episode. I was just like, it's weird that Sandy's here, but he does like, and you know what, Seth kind of calls him out for it later on. It probably is a little bit because he's going through these problems with Ryan,
right?
He's just like trying to defer his feelings to some other problem. And even Sandy says it later on, which I thought that scene was really good. But Sandy's like, nobody's talking to me anymore. What the hell? And I was like, yeah, he's just looking for somebody's problem to solve because that's what Sandy fucking does.
That's what he does. That's I wrote down that without even knowing it, he's like dadding Anna a little bit. Like,
yes, he is.
Sometimes you gotta be a dad to your son's girlfriend.
That's a callback to this show.
The worst.
Well, wasn't it the first time he had to be a dad to himself?
I like to use it whatever, because he's a dad to his two kids. He'll be a dad to anybody. He'll
dad the shit out of anyone.
But he also says, "Death comes a bit." Yes. That was a funny line.
Oh yeah, his obliviousness to like pop culture and stuff is super cute.
Yeah, adorable Sandy Cohen.
So then Luke enters the kitchen and he's carrying a bunch of groceries. He's a big strong guy. What a guy though! Like, you just show up, you're there to visit Ryan, and you see Kirsten like getting groceries out of the car. You're just like, hey, Mrs. Cohen, let me help you with those. Like, fucking Luke, he's great.
Best.
So Seth enters telling Sandy, so Luke wanted to talk to Ryan, that's why he's there. So he's like, is it cool if I go say hey to Ryan? And Sandy's like, yeah, go ahead. He's in the pool house. Seth enters the kitchen.
He's grounded, but sure, go on and talk to him.
Sandy Cohen. It's Luke. I mean, come on. Seth's telling Sandy that Summer's staying for dinner, and Anna's like visibly upset by this. She exits. Sandy smacks Seth in the back of the head with a newspaper. Deserve it.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. Like, sometimes that's all the fathering you need to do.
Well, Seth's reaction, he says, come on, man! Which I thought was a very funny reaction to your father hitting you upside the head.
Yeah. Terrific. So then we cut over to the pool house, and Luke tells Ryan that Natalie, Oliver's girlfriend, is not real. He, like, checked up on it at Pacific. She doesn't go there. Nobody knows who she is. This is terrific because Ryan is already going crazy in his pool house over Oliver, and I'm sure he won't do anything in light of this new info. He'll just be like, oh, thank you so much for telling me that, Luke. I'll go back to living my life, not bothering Marissa. So, yeah, this is going to be a problem.
This is when Ryan starts to really this is when I wrote, like, Ryan needs to chill. And again, granted, he was correct in the end to try to get into that room, but I was just like, man, somebody needs to tell this. Like, at this point, he really needs to start taking the advice of Sandy and Seth and just be like, bro, look out for yourself. Chill out. You don't need this drama in your life. And he's such a chill guy normally. I did feel like all of it was a little out of character. I mean, I guess he is in love with Marissa and does a lot of things throughout the show for Marissa, but like, he's normally just such, like, kind of a chill. I mean, he is quick to violence.
Yeah.
He's never obsessive. Like, he's obsessive over this. He, like, fixates on it and can't let it go. He's acting like he's in Rear Window. Like I said, it's like a horror movie where nobody believes him. It's making him crazy.
When it comes to, like, protecting people, he, like, goes into this weird place. Like, he something happens and he can't, like, not help people and not try to protect the people that are close to him.
Yeah.
All right.
Sometimes to his downfall.
That's true. So then we go over to Julie's driveway next door. Ryan's there when Marissa pulls up. Marissa's, like, pissed at him for telling her mom.
Because they live next door, Foo.
We live next door.
This is when I texted Muhammad. Yeah.
How is he there? What's going on?
How did he get there so fast?
Well, and then at the end of the scene, like, Sandy pops up again. Like, he was looking at him the whole time.
He's just sort of, like, staring at them from a distance.
That's when I texted Muhammad because I was like, why is Sandy here again? Why is he involved in all of these kids' business? Like, what are you doing? Just in this small window, guys, I know you love him, but he's a real creep in this episode. So
he's fiending for a problem to solve.
No, they were having dinner. He went to go get Ryan to be like, hey, we're having dinner. Ryan wasn't in the pool, in the pool house, and he probably heard the, like, yelling and commotion because it was right next door. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I'm going to go check this out, see what's going on, see if anyone needs my help.
Perfectly reasonable.
Yeah. Real quick to do that. Took him forever to help his wife with the groceries, but whatever. Real Johnny on the spot with the noise.
Damn. Ripping him up.
Hate him.
So, Ryan's in Julie's driveway. Marissa pulls up. Marissa's pissed at Ryan for telling Julie about Oliver because she called the school. They found out that they were skipping class or whatever. Ryan tells Marissa that Natalie isn't real. Marissa ain't hearing none of that. Julie comes out and tells Marissa she's in trouble for skipping school. Marissa's like, fuck you, bye. She takes off in the car.
Ryan does narc on her. I was thinking, like, I'd be pissed too, and even though Ryan's right, I don't know if I would just straight up forgive him if I was Marissa. You know what I mean?
That's like, the thing. It's like, after this episode, it's like, clean slate, like,
right,
everything is forgiven. Like, Ryan comes back to school, like, he and Marissa are all good. Like, it's just,
it's weird
that it there's no, like, lingering effects from all of this,
because it's just one of those situations where it doesn't matter who is right or wrong. Your behavior was not, like, I wanted to do this thing. Yes, I was wrong for wanting to do this thing, but I wanted to do it. And you wouldn't fucking leave me alone about it. So much that you narked me out to my mom.
Yeah.
Because you weren't happy with my decision.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I hate Marissa most of the show. I'm not a fan of hers. I just, her character is so irritating, more so than Oliver Trask, if you ask me. But I also don't really understand why. Like, I keep thinking, like, if I was Marissa, I probably would have stopped being friends with all of them. Even Summer, I would just be like, I need new friends. I don't understand. She doesn't get along with them, really, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Or doesn't, she's at this point in her life, she's just in a very different place than a Seth Cohen or a Summer.
Mm-hmm.
Or even a Ryan, you know?
Yeah, she needs to be with Oliver.
She needs to be with people that are like Oliver that aren't going to, you know, kidnap her. But you know what I mean? She needs to be, she's a troubled youth in a much different way than like a Ryan is.
Yeah.
Like Ryan was a good kid who just grew up in a bad neighborhood, basically. And mm-hmm. so he got into some trouble because everybody around him was getting into trouble. Marissa is an emotional, like in an emotionally bad place, in an emotionally unstable place. You know what I mean? Like they can't relate to that.
Yeah, and they don't, like they end up, you know, like breaking up, and like Marissa, yeah,
it broke my heart a little bit when she like hugs Ryan in the end of this episode, and I know we'll get to there, but she's like, I'm sorry. I'm like, what are you shouldn't be apologizing. I mean, yeah, you were wrong, but like,
yeah, like don't apologize to him.
Yeah,
in this, I don't know. Like in this moment, yeah, you're relieved, I guess, because he kind of saves the day.
But her initial thought was like, "Oh my god, I should have just listened to what this guy was telling me."
Sure.
It just seemed like the wrong. I don't know what the right thing is for Marissa, but she needs help, and she doesn't. The help doesn't need to be, I'll just listen to whatever Ryan says because he knows what's best for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. She needs a little more than what he's able to offer, I guess.
Mm.
So anyway, then we go to Oliver's penthouse, and Marissa's knocking on his door, crying. Oliver answers wearing 10 shirts. And Marissa wants to stay here tonight, and Oliver can barely hide his erection. And then we go to,
that's why he's wearing so many shirts.
And I hide that boner.
And his boner's on the middle of his chest. One pair of pants, 12 shirts.
You got
I do.
Mr. 12 shirts over here. Let's all go, let's all take a break and go put on as many shirts as you can. Come back and finish the episode. Alright, so we come back from commercial, we're in the pool house, it's the next morning. Sandy wakes Ryan up with coffee and bagels. He's ready for that heart-to-heart. Kirsten enters with coffee for Ryan as well. And Sandy goes, great minds. Because they're just there to like talk with Ryan. After the whole incident with Marissa last night, like they just want to like try to make sense of it all.
It's very sweet. Did you guys drink coffee in high school? Anybody?
No.
I did like frappuccinos and like not just like straight up coffee though.
I didn't drink coffee in high school, but everybody in TV shows and movies drink coffee when they're in high school. I wonder if it's more prevalent now though.
I mean, Starbucks, I think everybody now thing, is.
But yeah, mm-hmm. but they're huge. It's different. It's a different culture now.
How old are your kids?
10 and 6.
Do they drink coffee?
Yeah, tons. Straight through the veins.
I bet the older one wants like Starbucks drinks and stuff though, right? What does she get?
Milkshakes. No, they just want cake pops.
Oh, really?
And Monster Energy drinks.
Do they really?
No.
Oh, okay. Children, I don't know. Drink milk. Okay.
So for the if they do Monster Milk? If they do a reboot
the of Halloween milk, song?
To the Mons, to milk.
I just want to see like big 24-ounce cans of milk with the M on it that they drink.
Just wait.
So when Fu needs to talk to one of his kids, instead of coffee and a bagel, he walks in with a Monster Energy drink and a cake pop.
He cracks it open. I brought you one.
So Kirsten tells Ryan that Luke is here to see him, even though she and Sandy both came into the pool house to have like a heart to heart with him. And then she just came in and she's just like, well, Luke's here. And so Ryan's like, okay, bye. And so he just leaves.
He does say thanks.
What time is it now?
6 a.m.
Because it seemed like it was the evening when they were bringing in the groceries.
Yes, this is the next day.
Yeah. Luke came by the next morning.
But did they ever talk? They did talk, that's right. This is the next day and he's back. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. It didn't take him an entire evening to get from the main house to the pool house.
So the property is very vast.
So Luke says to Ryan, you know, did you tell Marissa that Natalie isn't real? How'd it go? And Ryan says that she didn't believe him. She ran away. And Luke really wants Ryan and Marissa to get back together for some reason. So he wants to go on another quest. So Ryan's spirit is broken. He thinks he's lost Marissa. And Luke's like, she'll listen to me. So he like takes off, I guess, after Marissa.
This is where I said that Ellen Luke stands for loyalty.
Oh, big time. This was like, he's going way above and beyond at this point. like going to
he's weirdly invested, more so than it seems like he should be.
Yeah. So then we go over to Oliver's penthouse with Marissa and Oliver. Ooh,
this is the artsy shot of the episode, because Luke is like, well, she'll listen to me, and leaves, and Ryan like just kind of hangs out in the foyer, and he like sits down, and the camera kind of moves so that there's like a column like right in the middle, and then it fades, and now it's like from the balcony of the penthouse looking in.
Ooh.
And like the doors are like are glass, but like the middle of the two doors is like the same exact width of the column. It's the artsy shot of the episode.
Damn. Yeah, that's some Wachowski level attention to detail there.
Has there been one in it? I mean, I feel like we haven't had one in a while.
It's been a few episodes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this got wrapped up in the Oliver shit. They haven't really had time for like style, I guess. Oliver definitely doesn't have time for style.
I'm wearing like 12 shirts, man. Come on. It's the coolest.
All these collars. So yeah, we're in Oliver's penthouse. Marissa and Oliver. This was a scene that was like very tough to get through because it's just two of them. Oliver's making plans. He's always making plans. He's like,
yeah. Why does he always want to leave town? I guess just because he's rich and it's a way to show off.
Yeah. So Paris comes up somehow, and Marissa's like, that'd be tight going to Paris. And Oliver's like, let's go, let's fucking go. And Marissa's like, yeah, right. And Oliver's like, look if you don't want to go to Paris with me, he's like so emotionally unstable. It is, God, I just have a note that's like, will somebody step in? I hate them both. Like, I need Luke to show up or something.
It's just so crazy that Marissa doesn't pick up. Like, I know you guys have talked about this to death, but it's just like, how is Marissa just like, this is normal?
Yeah.
how can it even like be fun for her though? Like, she's
not
with him like all day at school, all day like after school. And I would get it if he was like seemed fun to be around, but all he does, we should go here. What if we went here? We can go here. Let's go here. Let's go now. Why don't you want to? Like, because I'm in fucking high school. I can't just fucking leave the country for the weekend.
I feel like Marissa says, well, I do want to, but I just can't fly to Paris right now. I was like, what? I mean, that might be just a class thing that I can't understand, but I feel like if anybody said those words to me, I'd laugh. Like, that was a funny way to phrase that. I can't go fly to Paris right now.
I just can't right now.
Maybe like tomorrow. Let's talk about it tomorrow. Maybe we can play.
So Luke calls Marissa, thank God. Oliver's being like super sketchy while she's on the phone. telling her not to answer the phone. And then Luke tells Marissa that Natalie isn't real. And she doesn't believe him either because she's an idiot. And she tells Luke to go get her clothes from her mom's house and bring them to her at Oliver's penthouse. And Luke's just, he's like, okay, I'll be there in an hour.
Again, Mitchell, what does that L stand for?
Fucking loyalty, man.
Labrador.
I would say. I would be like, fuck you. Like, get your own clothes. So she hangs up, and for the first time ever, she seems a little skeptical of Oliver, right? Because she's thinking about Luke telling her that Natalie isn't real. And I understandably, like, two people have said that now within 24 hours. So, yeah, there's a little cause for concern there.
Yeah, finally.
Finally, for the first time ever, she's a little bit sketched out about it. She's not going to not hang out with him. She's not going to leave. She has a perfect out. She could be like, oh, I got to go get clothes for my mom's house. But no, Luke's doing that.
Yeah.
So then we go over to Kirsten's office. Kirsten enters. Julie's there. Julie has done a bang-up job with the renovation. It looks great. Kirsten
appreciates it. Looks great.
She breaks up with Julie for Caleb. Kirsten breaks up with Julie for Caleb. Caleb enters. Julie expresses her disappointment in both of them. She quits her job and she pieces out. And this is this where you said you felt bad for Julie, Muhammad? Because I felt kind of bad for her.
Yes. Yeah. Well, also, even that the scene where she goes to pick up Kirsten, really. I mean, but this is sad. But I felt bad. I saw through Julie in that scene where she goes to pick up Kirsten, where I was like, you just want Kirsten to be, you want Caleb Nichol to love you, and you want to be best friends with Kirsten, and you want to have a happy life, but you just don't have it.
Yeah.
Those things just aren't there for you. And then, yeah, it comes kind of to a head right here.
Kind of crumbles down, yeah. Mm. So let me jump over to the Coens game room. Summer, Seth, Anna, they're all watching Batman the Animated Series. I reckon the intro title sequence because I watch that show a lot. Sandy enters again. Here he comes to say hey to the kid.
Oh, yeah. Big Sandy moments. Big Sandy energy coming at you.
He sees, so Sandy sees Seth flirting with Summer, and then he sees Anna looking like tortured, and he asks to have a word with Seth. And so then Seth, they go to a different room. What room were they in? Have we ever seen that room before?
I think that was their bedroom.
Seth's bedroom?
No, Sandy and Kirsten's.
Sandy Kirsten's bedroom?
The kids were in their bedroom? Why?
No,
the room they went to.
I think, but that's like on the other side of the house. I don't know.
They took a long walk.
So he's.
I see you in the other room. No, not this room. No, not this one either. I don't like it.
Yeah, the one in the west wing of where the president lives. Seth. So Sandy's scolding Seth for flirting with Summer in front of Anna. And Seth's like, I wasn't flirting. We're just friends. I get excited when I turn people into comic books. And Sandy keeps going, going on about how it's got to be better. Seth's trying to bail. He's like, why are we still talking about this? And Sandy's like, because I'm your father and I'm responsible for you. And if I see something's going on, we are going to talk about it. That's the daddiest dad that ever dad.
Yeah. I get Fru's point here, but I did love this scene. I love the way that he's parenting. It just makes me happy to see him parenting.
It's just like where my dad would have told me to fuck off and go to my room.
He's so like actually involved and feels like he seriously cares about the man that Seth is becoming.
Yeah, to me, it feels like he's always making it about him. Like, maybe it's just a small sample, but it seems like all of his parenting is about him and how good of a parent he needs to be for them, regardless of whether they need it or want it.
I don't think you're wrong here, Fu. I think you got it right. I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think over time I've learned to really appreciate his weird obsessive dadding. But it is for like him, his own, like he's like, I'm a good father. Every time he does it to himself, he's like, ah, shit. I'm
getting out of that kid.
I'm doing great with these kids. I mean, it is weird. And this is maybe just a comment on the way that a lot of sort of teen dramas are presented, even the more serious ones where, I mean, I was never in a serious relationship in high school, so maybe it'd be different, but I never remember caring too much. I wasn't like a bad guy to any girl I was dating or anything. I just didn't date girls for very long. So I was constantly like having other girls over and flirting with other girls or whatever, because I was 16 and it's like, I wasn't going to end up with any of these people. It's weird in shows like that where they have to take their relationships so seriously.
Right.
Because I feel like as a parent, maybe your kids are getting old enough, your two daughters, but I feel like anytime they try to tell me about any boyfriend they had when they were 15, I'd be like, or girlfriend when they're 15, I'd be like, sure, do whatever you want. You're going to forget all about this person in 3 years, you know?
Yeah, I can't imagine being Sandy and being super concerned about how faithful he's being to Anna or not faithful, like.
Yeah, they're 16.
Like, yeah. He doesn't want his son to be a shitty person.
He is being shitty to Anna in that moment, but it just feels like it's a little outside of Sandy's jurisdiction, maybe as a father.
Like it's something that
personal relationships.
If you were Sandy in that situation, like what would you do? Like, would you just not? Would you not enter the room at all? Like, let's say you were in the room and you witnessed your son like flirting with another girl in front of his girlfriend, and then you saw like how uncomfortable his girlfriend was. Would you just be like, "Well,
yeah, I think I would." Like, oh, this isn't any of my business. Like, maybe dinner table, like later, be like,
"Yeah,
maybe you should just break up with Anna." Like.
So or like ask him about it, like what's the deal with you and Anna? Is everything going okay? But not to be like
pull him away. Yeah. Like imagine Seth going back to the girls and then be like, hey, what was that about?
that's a scene that we don't see.
I wish we did.
I do think the actual fight, this was another good felt kind of true to life. The way that Seth is reacting to his dad is very 16-year-old fight tactics, where he's just like almost gaslighting his father, being like, why are you even mad? Like, what's the big deal?
It's really about dad.
Like,
he flips it on him.
Yeah. And in a way that it's just like that sort of like, you know, and maybe Seth actually thought like, why am I in trouble for this? And maybe he was right. but I remember doing that kind of stuff as like a kid, like even if I knew my parents had a reason to be legitimately mad at me, my tactic was always kind of like, maybe if I act like it's not a big deal, they'll just act like it's not a big deal, you know? Yeah. Which is a useful, I don't know if it worked, but. At least gave me like it was a way to not escalate any fight that you're in with your parent, is just to be like, it's no whatever, and they're mad and you're just like, it's fine.
Yeah, but I think you guys are right though. Like the more I think about it, like my parents stayed the fuck away from my relationship.
Never had a TV show.
No, I did. I did, Jay. I had a TV show.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about your primetime TV show on ABC.
The Mosey.
The Mosey. Hey. Seth's kind of like, Dad, is this really about Ryan? And Sandy assures him that it's not. And Seth's like, well, okay, but in case it is a little bit about Ryan, I think he'll come to you when he's ready. And that's how that scene ends.
And then they each like pat each other, like Seth pats Sandy on the back and then Sandy pats Seth on the back.
You missed out on, there's some amazing Seth and Sandy father-son moments throughout the show.
Yeah.
And Ryan too, but But Seth and Sandy have a special relationship that's super fun in most episodes, just not this one.
Yeah.
Luck of the draw.
Like in what?
I said luck of the draw.
Oh, yeah. You picked...
That's the episode I got.
Kind of a weird episode to jump in on. But
well, both the episodes I've been on, which I always beg you guys to let me on this show because I love the show, but...
We let you because you're our boss.
I'm not your boss. You put me on, I think, like important episodes. But, you know, my favorite episodes are like the fun, silly, fun time ones. Ones that aren't like people ODing and guns. And this is the... Oh, we'll get there. I don't want to jump the shark.
But, don't talk about the gun yet.
Don't talk about the gun.
Julie, just kidding. We're at Julie's front door. Okay, this is interesting. Luke is there to pick up Marissa's clothes. So Julie answers the door. She's crying because she just got dumped by Kirsten, or by Caleb via Kirsten.
Yeah.
Marissa's room. Luke is sitting on the bed while Julie gets Marissa's stuff. So I guess she's like cool with whatever Marissa wants to do. She's like,
Marissa called her to be like, Luke's coming to get my stuff. Because she's like, come in, I'll get Marissa's stuff. Like, she knows what's going on.
Yeah. So she can...
Still doesn't care to be like, come home, quit hanging out with this boy I don't know.
Just got dumped by her
You're in trouble.
Boyfriend.
Yeah, she doesn't... She forgot about Marissa, like, 10 minutes after Marissa left. She was just like, yeah, I guess there goes my weekend.
And we all forgot about Caitlin. That's right, Foo. He has another daughter.
who did get mentioned in this episode.
Missed that.
With her grandparents again or something?
Yeah, that's why Jimmy's not in this episode.
She hasn't been around in like 10 episodes. I mean, she was like left in episode 5 or something, I feel like, and hasn't come back.
The yacht was the last time we saw Caitlin, maybe?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I'm glad to hear that she's still alive, though, in this episode.
We all are. Julie confides in Luke here, and he consoles her because he's the best, and she thanks him with a little hug and one of them little cheek kisses that she gives people. But when she pulls away from the hug, though, they lock eyes, and it is intense. And she tells Luke to go, and he leaves. And I'm like, damn. How big a boner did you have at the end of this scene?
Right, well, in the middle of my chest.
So I got a couple of questions. First of all, this cheek kiss is something she does regularly then?
Well, she's
not
like,
a new move?
She's very, like, she went to Paris, and she's, like, adopting a lot of European things. So, yeah, she does the cheek kiss when she greets people because she's... vapid or whatever.
Mm-hmm. She is close with Luke, or had a close relationship with him at one time.
Didn't something interrupt them? Am I misremembering that?
No.
Yeah, no, she just kind of pulls back, right?
There was something that like happened to interrupt. Maybe it was just
the sprinklers go off and they get all...
I think what interrupted them was her realizing that he's a high schooler.
Sure.
Illegal.
I will say, as much as this is the moment that I was referring to, of course, when I was like, it feels like a storyline that they had pinned up on a board and they were just picking things to throw into this episode. I will say that I appreciate that there was some precedents set for this relationship.
James Buchanan?
Yeah, that president. For their relationship, like maybe not super clear, but they have taught, like, Julie loves Luke and she wanted Marissa to be with Luke.
Yeah.
Right. And that means she thinks Luke is like a suitable man. You know what I mean? And has really never made two ways about it. She's into Luke. We haven't seen her be sexually into Luke until this moment, but
yeah.
But at least I was kind of like, oh, I see where this came from. You know what I mean?
Well, like,
she was like, I just got done fucking this old guy. Let me go opposite end of the spectrum.
I mean,
and with Luke too. I mean, you can make an argument. This might be a little bit reaching, but Luke has been lonely since Marissa, and since he's been a little outcasted, he's been kind of the fifth wheel with the group of friends. Often, you know, this might be like, oh wow, somebody loves me again. I haven't had that in a while. You know, that's yeah, kind of reaching. That's maybe not so much in the text, but
no. Now they'll all hang out together, and it'll be. It'll be Ryan and Marissa and Luke and Marissa's mom. Just double dating.
This is like a Charles Dickens novel. Everybody in bed with each other. It's fantastic.
So does this relationship continue?
Spoiler.
Did something happen?
Oh, they fuck.
Yes.
Do they really?
Yeah.
They fuck a couple times.
And do they make like an effort to be like, is there ever a line where Luke's like, it's okay, I'm 18, at least one of those moves, or do they just ignore that?
Well, no, they probably do say something like that, but no, they full on bone. And
not in this episode, but eventually.
If I recall correctly, like Luke kind of like falls for Julie.
Yeah.
Like, you're my girlfriend now or something. And she's like, whoa, I got to get the fuck out of here. So she kind of like into things. But then, like, I think like Marissa finds out or something. And then that's kind of the impetus for Luke to kind of exit the show. Like, that character to. Because he's gone after this season. They write him out of the show, which is unfortunate because we like him so much. But you can tell already that they're struggling to find.
Well, like I said, he got Ned Flandered immediately. It's a phrase.
Everyone on the Zoom call all just gave you the like, what the fuck are you?
I know Ned Flanders from The Simpsons, but like
it's like a phrase that they use sometimes when writing about TV, specifically about a character that. Ran out of steam as like a complex character throughout the show, so then they just made him sort of a one note joke. They took the one sort of thing about him and made that
that's definitely what's happening with Luke
then. But so fast, like it happens in a lot of times, especially in sitcoms, and sometimes I think it works out well. We were talking about Friends on an episode of Rank Brothers, the Rank Brothers podcast recently.
Save
but
the plugs till the end,
just sprinkle them in there, Jay. Oh. But I really like that Ross got Ned Flandered in that show because I thought he was much funnier when they like just made him a goofy, silly comic relief character rather than like a complex, interesting character, you know? And maybe the same could be said about Luke. I like him a lot better now than I did in the first few episodes. But when you do that with a character, you're right. You are just going to run out of steam real quick, especially if you're on this sort of pace.
Right. And he doesn't... bit into the group dynamic anymore. Like,
yeah. He didn't really have a purpose.
Yeah, he started as like Ryan's foil, Marissa's boyfriend. Like, he was kind of like the rival, and now he's like a fifth wheel or seven.
It is weird that they didn't keep the rival thing going for a couple of seasons at least, and maybe like a contentious friendship, but he's always kind of hanging out with it. But they just immediately like backed off of that. I wonder what happened and. You know what I mean? Why that's...
I don't know.
I think also because none of... Well, I think Misha Barton we discovered was like 18, but the rest of them were like older than high schoolers. And of all of them, Luke is like the least passable as a high schooler.
Yeah, like, he looks like a man.
He looks like a grown man. So yeah. I think they were like, we're probably only going to get one season out of this guy because he's about to be 30. And is there if we're going to be able to pass him along as a junior in high school?
I go back and forth with Ryan where there are moments where I'm like, he looks like an adult. He looks way too old. And then there's moments where I'm like, he looks like a little kid.
He
literally the very first thing I wrote was that kid looks like an adult. In the very first scene, like they mentioned Juvie, and I was like, Juvie with his hair.
Kid with six pack.
It gets worse. I think it's like around season two. They really similar to like how we were saying like Oliver's hair being like,
They start doing those
look like a kid. They do that with Ryan, but it's still like why does that man have a child's haircut?
They give him one of those big swirly lollipops and a cap with a propeller.
So we're getting into the third act here, and it's heating up. So we go to the front lobby of the hotel. Marissa goes down there to get her things. She notices the receptionist's name is, or the concierge rather, is Natalie. And she asks if she knows Oliver. And Natalie's like, yeah, I used to babysit him. And Marissa's like, your last name isn't Bishop, is it? And she's like, yeah. And Marissa's like, oh, fuck.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So then we cut back over to the murder penthouse where Marissa enters. And clingy-ass Oliver's like, I just got out of the shower and you're gone. Why didn't you answer your cell phone? I tried to call you. I can't wait. I can't wait to wear your flesh like a jacket. Chris is like, well, I just went to the lobby to get my bag. Funny thing, the concierge's name is Natalie Bishop, like your ex-girlfriend, right? Gotcha. And then Oliver's like, he does that like, baby pitching a fit thing where he's like slapping himself in the head and saying how stupid he is, like he did with Ryan in an earlier episode.
I gotta say, the first time he did that, I think it was the one where they were the Lynx, the golf one.
Palm Springs.
I found it like weird and like unsettling and not like scary, but just like, oh shit, this guy's. But when he did it again, I was like, oh, this is like his thing that he does.
Yeah, it's like a gimmick that he. Yeah.
Oliver in this scene was really swinging for the fences and in a good way, acting wise. He was going as big and as hard as he could.
Nuts.
Seeing him do that for the first time, I felt like, whoa, that's pretty unsettling.
Yeah,
that's the same feeling I got watching him on this scene, having seen it for the first time.
Yeah.
It's the first time.
Yeah.
Subsequent times, it has diminishing returns with this.
sure. Can see that.
What did you guys think of the Natalie reveal? Was that cool or was that stupid?
I liked it because I feel like it gave some kind of almost like what they were going for was a like Usual Suspects kind of thing, you know. But it's like. It wasn't, obviously, it like wasn't as, you know,
interesting.
It was a lot more straightforward of like, oh, he just said his girlfriend was essentially like his nanny, or because like his parents aren't around, so I think she's kind of like keeps an eye on him because she works at the hotel. But yeah, it was
weird.
Yeah, I thought that reveal was pretty good too. I thought that was pretty well done.
I think maybe after like six episodes of hearing Natalie's not real, to be like, oh, Marissa figured it out because the concierge had a name tag that was Natalie. But I do appreciate like the attempt at like a cool Usual Suspects type moment, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then like the more I thought about it, the more I was like, that was kind of like a weird, like a foul ball, you know what I mean? Like one of those like monster foul balls where you're like, I guess it doesn't really matter.
there's stuff in the show, especially with this whole Oliver arc, where in my mind I'm like, I wish they hadn't done it that way. But then I have to be like, well, what did I want them to do? Like, what's my...
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And sometimes I have like a thing in mind where I'm like, well, it would have been cool if they did this. But also the other times I'm just like, I guess I just didn't really like the decision that they made, but they made a decision, you know? It's like,
yeah,
it's...
Well, part of it too is that the Oliver saga is built up a lot. And there's some like weird red flags throughout the six episodes that don't really end up going anywhere. And then it kind of, I mean, not fizzles out. This is a big, wild ending.
Mm-hmm.
But there does seem like there's a lot of, like, I think the Natalie thing was supposed to be the thing that was, like, makes your jaw drop a little bit. But I was expecting maybe something bigger. Maybe not at this point, but definitely, like, within the first few episodes. You remember when Anna, it's, like, the first Oliver episode. Yeah. And they're at that New Year's party. And Anna's like, my parents know that are friends with the people who own this penthouse. And they're like, oh, so you know Oliver. And she goes, who?
Yeah,
you think, you're like, whoa, is like Oliver just like stealing this place or whatever? But none of that really happens.
I mean, it seems like, I guess he was mostly just telling the truth, but he was just kind of crazy.
So we've had a number of theories about Oliver throughout this whole thing. We thought he murdered someone and took their identity. We thought he was a vampire for a little while.
They play it like that, though. It's like the show's fault that you expect something like that, but then in the end, it's just that, oh yeah, he just stole that name and he's just a liar and he's kind of crazy. You know what I mean? It's not as exciting as you kind of think it is when you see him standing outside that window and all those other like really crazy moments that he has.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my thought was, it wasn't that that reveal was a letdown. It was that he has invited those kids up to his penthouse many, many times. And he has told them that his girlfriend's name is Natalie Bishop. And the concierge for the hotel that these kids have gone to many, many times, her name is Natalie Bishop. Like, it just seems kind of sloppy.
Yeah, like, he could have even just done, like, Battley Nishup, and maybe that would have thrown him off a little bit.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. we'll get to it. There was a really funny, this is similar to my library scene in my fan fiction. I have another little tiny line I would have added that I think would have really made this episode.
It's going to be another Great Gatsby.
No literature.
Never. So Marissa calms Oliver down. She tells him to go change and they'll go, I guess, to Paris or whatever. And he exits, and she calls Ryan while he's gone.
This is another instance where text messaging hadn't quite become the like primary way of communicating, because it would have saved a whole lot of trouble if she'd just been like, come help me.
Yeah, Oliver, crazy.
You right. You right.
I'm sorry.
So she,
and Ryan just writes, on my way.
Yeah, OMW. Ryan takes an excruciatingly long amount of time to answer the phone, which is great. It's a great tension builder.
Yeah, because you're like, maybe he's not going to answer.
Yeah. Or maybe Oliver will come back before he gets a chance to. But so he answers the phone. Marissa's like, you were right about Oliver. And then Oliver enters with a gun. And he tells Marissa to give him the phone, and she does. And he takes the phone and he goes, bye, Ryan. And he's like a fucking psycho.
That was the best thing that he did in this whole scene. Like, just that really quick, like, bye, Ryan. And then he hangs up and it goes to commercial, and you're like, holy shit. But then the next time he's like, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to. Just like me. I just want you to like me. It's like, oh no, he's still a whiny guy. He didn't go like full like.
Did you start to feel bad or sad a little bit? I think when he was like, it's not for you, it's for me, which you kind of already knew.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this poor dude. Like, he just really needs help.
Yeah, it is sad.
Yeah. Like, it goes from being, I kind of wish they just leaned into him like as a supervillain. I mean, this is more realistic, but it was also like, oh, this has just become sort of sad and fucked up and weird. And then, like I said, Marissa's reaction, I don't like. Just everything about the way kind of all wrapped up, I was just a little like, this is strange and uncomfortable and sad.
It was a little like White Knight-y with Ryan like swooping in and saving the day.
Yeah, well, we could talk about that too.
Do it. We got
a couple things.
We'll wrap it up. So we go back to the Cohen's kitchen. They're cleaning up after lunch, I guess, or whatever. Summer has left. Anna is pissed at Seth. Seth apologizes, but Anna ain't really buying it. Ryan comes in like, hey, I think Marissa might be in trouble. I'm just going to go check on her. And Sandy's like, give me the keys. And
this is the fucking best.
Ryan's like, hey, he's like, hey, man, you said if I needed help. And Sandy's like, give me the keys. And Ryan, like, kind of like sheepishly hands him over to Sandy. And Sandy goes, I'll drive. Boom.
I stood up on my chair and I raised my arms in the air.
I I fist pumped. I'm so glad that I have high ceilings where I'm staying right now because I was jumping and pumping fists.
I loved it. I really did. Great.
I half expected him to like look around the room and go for a high five with all of this. I got him on that one, right?
I know this girl's life is in
danger. Good dad, he says to himself again.
Yeah. Seconds to like string Ryan along a little bit.
Yeah.
God.
I'm a great dad. I'm doing it. I'm doing great, guys.
Oh, so good. I hope Kirsten saw that. Oh, she was like just in the other room looking over.
Oh, we'll give myself a good pat on the back after that one.
Can't wait to tell the other dads about this.
A dad club?
Dad club! Dad club.
I'm going to dad all of them with how good of a dad I was.
He's the president of dad club.
100%. But then we go over to H.H. Holmes's penthouse, and Oliver is freaking out. Princess is freaking out. She's like, "You're my friend." And Oliver's like, "I'm in love with you, stupid." And Marissa's like, "Then why would you want to shoot me?" And Oliver's like, "This isn't for you," referring to the gun. "This is for me. Because if you leave, I'll have nothing to live for." Fucking yikes. Big yikes there. The phone rings. We cut to the lobby. Sandy and Ryan are trying to call the penthouse from the lobby of the hotel. They go to the concierge and say there's an emergency in the penthouse. Nat can't let them up. Ryan notices that Nat is Nat, and she's like, "Oh, you're
calling her Nat."
Yeah, where did that come from?
Are you friends with her? Natalie's so many syllables. I'm calling her Nat. That's my girl, Nat Bish.
Natty Bish.
Natty Bish. So she's like, "Oh, you're a friend of Oliver's." I was like, "Yeah, I'm a friend of that fucking psychopath. Let's go."
This is my little thing that I would have added, where he goes, "You're Natalie?" And she goes, "Mm-hmm." And he goes, "Natalie Bishop?" And she goes, "Yeah." And then she should have went, "Why does everyone keep asking me what my full name is?"
I was seriously wondering what happens in between him going, "You're Natalie Bishop," and then her, because she says, "I can't let you up," but then he's like, "You're Natalie Bishop," and she goes, "Yes," and then smash cut to them upstairs. So did he go, "Okay, so Oliver's been telling everybody that you're his girlfriend, and I think he's dangerous, and Marissa's up there. Marissa's like my brother's, well, he's not my actual brother, but they're neighbors, and then we're dating for him." Like, just go through the entire, like, how did he explain that? And at what point was she like, "Cool, I guess I will let you up"?
He probably had some shorthand where he was just like, "He's up there with another girl that he's obsessed with." And she's like, "I'll get the security guards, because this happens a lot with Oliver. He gets obsessed with a girl and he goes nuts."
Because surely people would know about that, because he did have a girl at his old school put a restraining order out against him.
Right, exactly, yeah. And so maybe Natalie knows about that, or maybe she at least believed Ryan once he, like, kind of, like, she knew that he knew more about Oliver than he was originally letting on. I don't know. But, yeah, that's another, like, jump cut thing where it just kind of, like, you know, skips
up. Like, you figure it out.
So we cut to Ryan, Sandy, Nat, and like, you know, security guards approaching the penthouse door. Nat knocks on the door.
She knocks on the door. She goes, "Ollie, it's Nat."
Oliver says that, like, everything's fine, and she's like, "Well, everything's fine." And then Ryan's like, "No, everything's not fine. I just talked to Marissa." And so he calls out for Marissa. He's like, "Marissa!" He's like yelling for her. And then after he does it a couple of times, Marissa's like, "Right, he's got a gun." And so they're like, "We're moving in." So they master key, open the door. They walk in. The security guards have guns.
And they draw them and point them.
Pointing them at Oliver.
This is, this is Trask Hotel, okay? This is a top of the line place. They got guns.
I'm starting to think like his parents are never around because they're like in the mafia or something. What is up with this hotel? So yeah, they enter, guns drawn on Oliver. Oliver points the gun at his head. He's like, let me like do you a favor or whatever. And Ryan talks him down. Ryan Atwood talks Oliver down. Yeah.
So if you're Sandy Cohen or one of the other three adults in the room, what do you think's going through your head letting the teen boy take control of this dangerous situation where three guns are present?
I'll tell you what's going through Sandy's head, because in the middle of Ryan talking him down, they cut to Sandy. And he looks so goddamn proud.
It is insane. That is an insane reaction to what is happening. Of being like, I did good with this kid.
Like nodding his head in approval.
But also, you're not like, once he starts talking, you don't want to, in hostage situations or anything like that, you don't want to have like a bunch of people talking. So
no,
like,
but you also don't want the teenager doing the talking when there's four adults.
Who do you want to do the talking? Nat?
Nat. I want Nat.
Yeah, probably. Actually, she's probably closest with him. She used to babysit.
She doesn't really know what's going on.
I don't know, but an adult. An adult should be in charge.
Guys, it had to be Ryan.
He had to defeat him.
Because he can relate to Oliver. He says, I know what it's like to be abandoned by your parents, your friends, to have no one in your life who believes in you, but you put the gun down and you get a second chance. Like, he's a fucking expert hostage negotiator.
Yeah, I did write he's doing a good job. I just kept thinking, how insane is it that there's all these adults in this room and they just sort of shut up and let him do his thing?
The show is about the kids.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It had to be.
Right. It would be like real life situation. It would probably be Sandy. I mean, real we already life. Know he yeah, does well with troubled kids.
Right. Yeah, the lawyer deals with at risk youth. He would probably be the guy to talk here. Yeah.
I feel like Sandy would have jumped in if he needed to.
Oh yeah, he was ready, but he was like. He was like, you got this one, Ryan.
It was also the way they were cutting, because they cut to Sandy a couple times. It was almost like the camera was like, you gonna take it from here, Sandman? You jumping in?
I'm good.
So he's like, let the kid talk.
He's got it. My boy's got it. So yeah, Sandy's proud as shit, you know? The daddy has become the daddy. Oliver puts the gun down. The guards, like, take him away. And Marissa runs to Ryan apologizing profusely, which we pointed out is a little problematic. So then we cut over to the Cohen's kitchen. Seth and Anna are playing what I would say is the saddest game of Jenga ever played.
Again, we've gone into a lot of detail on it's dumb that their Jenga is one of their things.
Yes. Why Jenga of all the games? Well,
although it's pretty... it's pretty representative of their relationship right now. It's falling apart.
Oh, God.
Oh.
Doggy.
I'm bringing it, you guys. I'm bringing it.
So Kirsten gets off the phone, I'm assuming with Sandy, and lets them know that Marissa's okay and the police are taking Oliver to the hospital. Kirsten exits. Seth's like, I'm going to call Summer. And Anna's like, what the fuck? And he breaks up with
him. I wish the only time they said fuck in this show is just Anna going, what the fuck? Just right here. You're just like, did she just say fuck? On Fox at like 8:30 on a Thursday?
Sure did.
Cool.
Yep. So she breaks up with Seth. That's the end of their relationship. It's kind of...
Yeah, it happened super quick. And like...
It also didn't like the last.
Yeah, it built for a long time.
it needed to happen, you know.
And the breakup just didn't have much weight in the episode, and then also doesn't really have much weight in the scene after where Sester's like, "Man, I broke up with me."
Yeah,
it's like, oh, okay, I guess this is like
high school baby.
So it's weird what they do. I'm trying to remember. If she, like, leaves for a little while and then comes back and then leaves for good, or if she just leaves. I really can't remember, but
if she's in the next episode or not.
I know that there's for sure, like, the last episode that she's in this season, she goes to the airport and Seth, like, goes after her because he didn't get to say goodbye or something. And that almost felt like the breakup that this should have been, as opposed to, like, what's happening in this moment of just, like, all right.
When Seth races to the airport, is she like, I'm going to South Carolina to become a Trump supporter and an anti-masker? that's the person that actress is now.
Yeah. It's hard to knowing that.
You lost,
Anna. You lost. Election.
Meanwhile, Seth was in Scream 4. I guess that movie came out like 10 years ago now, but he's in it.
Hey.
He's in that new Kid Detective movie, I think.
He's
in. I really like Adam Brody. I love seeing him in things. He's great.
He's wonderful.
So then we cut over to the pool house. Ryan enters. Seth's on the bed reading Cavalier and Clay. Seth draws a parallel between the protagonists in the book and himself and Ryan. Seth says, we're kind of like Cavalier and Clay, except I totally blew it. Since you got here, you have totally had my back. Callback.
And that's what they call a callback in comedy, Ryan.
Mark it.
Episode one, he says.
In the pool house.
Same situation. They're in the pool house together after, like, Ryan fights Luke because he was picking on Seth, and Seth goes, "You totally had my back out there."
That's right.
Wow,
you guys are good at catching those. There's been a couple.
That seems like a small thing.
This might be the biggest callback, because as far as like time in between, because there was another one from episode one that was like a few episodes ago about the threesome.
Right, that was a good one.
This is the current champion of longest callback.
Yes,
it will be defeated by the end of this season. But I think this one, 18 episodes.
Teaser.
Yeah,
I'm hoping there's another Yoga Lattes.
Yoga Lattes. So Seth apologizes to Ryan. He promises to never let him down again. Ryan forgives him. Seth tells him that he and Anna broke up. And Ryan says, oh, she broke up with you? And Seth goes, now why would you assume that? And Ryan goes, Seth, come on. And I laughed out loud. Like, it was like, obviously she broke up with you. You didn't break up with her. And then we get a nice jib out to, what is it called? Turin Breaks is the name of the band. I looked it up. I've never heard it.
It's a good song. I had never heard it before, but I like it.
It's not the first time they've used that band. I don't know if it's the same song, but that band name has been used. Oh, it might have been. It was another like end of an episode song that I think we both were like, I liked this song.
Yeah, it was cool. So, cool.
Turn breaks.
Were you guys?
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Were you guys half expecting when they pulled out of the window that?
Oliver. The last note I had, I was like, we jib out to Turin Breaks. This time, no creepy Oliver watching.
It did seem like purposefully, reminiscent of that scene.
A little bit, yeah.
And so the Oliver era comes to an end. And the final scene is exactly what we all wanted. Not Ryan and Marissa, but Ryan and Seth.
It's true.
Having some quality bro time.
Marissa's gone in the same moment that Oliver's gone. I wonder if like the show kind of knew that her character was shitty at this point already. I mean, I know she's one of the main cast. You know, she's a huge part of that show, but it just seems like it does feel sometimes like they've given up on Marissa pretty quickly.
No, because she's in 3 seasons, so
yeah, and she gets major storylines. It's just like I always anticipate them writing her better. I feel like I'm getting into too shit talky of territory, But no, it seems like the show is not a badly written show, but for whatever reason, her character tends to get short shrift on character choices and decisions and dialogue and a lot of things.
Well, what they do and what this arc kind of sets up is that she has bad judgment when it comes to, like, trusting dudes. Like, this is not the first guy that she's like, I like spending time with this guy. Some of them she gets, like, romantically involved with, some of them, but it's always just like, you're fucking doing this again? Like, another shitty dude that maybe you shouldn't be so committed to, but it's just kind of a part of her character, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's too bad. So then we roll credits and the episode's over, guys. Who do we got for OC MVP this time?
Fu, at the end of every episode, we pick an OC MVP, the star of the episode, the person who just really just, you know, deserves to hold that trophy up.
Who do you got?
For me, no question. I loved him from the moment I met him. Luke is the MVP of this episode, 100%.
All right.
How could he not be, honestly? Who else could possibly be MVP this episode?
I mean, you got Ryan talking down a hostage situation.
It is impressive, although irresponsible.
I said Ryan, one, because we've given Luke, like, the last three OC MVPs. He's on quite a run. But I felt like this was not just for, like, this episode. Like, this was Ryan overcoming, like, six episodes worth of you know, nobody having his back and nobody believing him and him kind of overcoming it.
Hot take. I think we should give it to Oliver Trask.
What?
He puts the gun down. He makes the right choice in the end. He is a troubled...
He's the fucking problem, man.
He's a troubled young man, and in the end, he didn't hurt himself or hurt others, and that's huge.
You know what? You know what's happening right now? We're getting into Rank Brothers territory, where you guys make hot takes, and listen. And people have very strong feelings about your hot takes.
It's true.
I was going to say, if I'm ranking him my second MVP, I think you can make a case for Anna. She leaves her terrible relationship.
Stands up to...
So I'm not putting up with this shit.
I just feel like you guys tend to give it to the same few people, and it's nice to spread the love when you can. I mean, was Oliver shitty in this episode? Sure. But does he redeem himself at the end? Yes, he does.
I don't know if he redeems.
Well, he doesn't shoot anybody.
No. We gave, I'll have you know, we gave the last episode OC MVP to Damian Rice for the song. The singer song.
Yeah, that guy. That's right. So is he the blower's daughter guy? Was that him?
Yeah.
One time we gave it to Chip, a character who's...
I mean, that was my favorite MVP. That's my number one in the MVP rankings.
You know who I did put on my list of... because I like to do a serious one and a jokey one. My jokey one, Nat.
Nat.
She does let him up. She's the one who opens the door. I give it to Nat.
He was like the...
I like Nat, too.
Yeah, she was like the MacGuffin in this episode or something.
And spoiler alert, you guys, we never see her again.
Oh, damn. Oh, oh, I'm quitting watching. Nat. All right, Natalie's the MVP. I'm declaring it.
I'll vote for Nat over Oliver.
Oliver, yeah, if those are my two choices.
That was a long shot.
Yeah, it was. I know.
All right, Nat.
But I feel bad for the kid. He needs help.
He does.
Everybody's treating him like he's the villain when he's a victim of his own self-destructive behavior and probably poor parenting, too.
Yeah, his parents are never around. I blame them. But, all right.
Maybe Anna's who, sorry to harp on anything at this point when we should be wrapping up, but maybe Anna's who was more a comment on how little Oliver's parents care for him. They didn't even mention him to Anna or her family.
Oh.
Oh.
I'll buy that. Yeah. Because that's the only way to explain that.
Yeah. You think Anna ever had a moment where she's like, I know your parents. They never mentioned you. Fucking weird. And all was like, yeah, they're really busy. I don't know.
Well, Muhammad Fuad, thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Plug your wonderful podcast.
Now we'll allow the plug.
Yeah, listen to the Rank Brothers podcast. Me and Fu rank every single thing in the world.
We're working on it.
It's yeah.
Beginning stages.
What have we done, Fu? What have we ranked?
Boy, we've ranked Monopoly tokens. We've ranked Mario Kart characters.
Little Debbie snacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did Last Waltz songs with Jay Howell. You can listen to that.
Oh, yeah. That was a
good I was on it.
We have an episode planned with Mitchell Hartage that is going to take a little bit more work, so we haven't done it yet. But
coming soon.
Yeah.
You guys just, at the time of this recording, you guys just did a Thanksgiving Foods one, and yeah. Our fantasy football message board was up in arms about all of your decisions, and there was a lot of heated discussion about sides. It was very much unexpected, but then I thought, you know what? Yeah.
That's the beauty of the podcast. It gets people heated.
It's a very fun...
The takes can be hot.
Because I listen to it, and I find myself going, well, what are my top five favorite things? And then when I disagree with you guys, I do get a little upset about it.
Yeah, for sure. We get upset with each other all the time. Thanks, Jay. That's a very kind thing to say. I mean, I think that's what we're going for. We want people to feel like they're angry when our picks don't align with their picks. So get heated.
You want to be angry? Listen to the Rank.
But yeah, that's the Rank Brothers podcast. You can find that wherever you get podcasts, and you can follow us on Instagram at Rank Bros Pod. And our theme song was made, it's the thing that we get complimented on the most, and it was made by Mitchell Hartish.
Hey,
that's it is love wonderful. That theme.
Yeah, and it's much shorter than this podcast. So.
Yeah, the episodes are around 30 to 40 minutes.
You could fit like six of their podcasts on our podcast.
Was my episode the longest one?
Actually, I don't think it was. I think Kill Bill Villains has been our longest one, and that was just me and Fu. No. We got real heated about it.
Anytime Muhammad gets to rambling, you don't know what could happen.
Yeah, honestly. Can you guys tell by listening to this podcast?
This might be one of our longest ones.
Yeah. We had multiple voices.
Yeah. Well, cool. Thank you so much for getting to the end of this episode with us. If you like the show, feel free to subscribe. Leave us a review. Helps out a lot. And if you want to chat with us, you can reach us at jnmitchellstheocpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, we will, everybody,
see ya later.
Podcast is a Kitty Wing production.